Hey, everybody, we're back. It's part two of Boss Barrel Radio's Game of the Year 2013 Discussion of Ravaganza. I, again, still am Griffin Hoffman, and Jeff Brewer is still Jeff Brewer.
No. I'm Nicolas Cage now.
And the report is in. The facts are in.
We have just to steal hot off the wire.
Jamie Scherer is still Jamie Scherer.
Nope, I'm Goldie Hawn from 1987.
It's a good year for Goldie Hawn.
It's always
I'm
happens.
Charming but quirky, but also not threatening.
Have you given birth to Kate Hudson yet? Probably.
Yes.
Okay.
Of course.
Sweet. How's it feel being a mom?
Liberating.
That's what I thought. So are we just going to give this to Rise or what?
Yep.
Okay.
Done. So end. Stop recording. So following our theme of before, we have this game of the year that we're going to decide here, hash out. We have obviously one winner that we'll have to decide, and there'll be four runners up. Maybe. Probably. I think probably. So.
Sure.
We'll read off the nominees, and then if we have any that others that pop up, we can throw them on there, and then kick them off immediately, or whatever. So the list that we have so far is DMC, Devil May Cry, Bioshock Infinite, The Last of Us, Shadowrun Returns, Assassin's Creed 4, The Pirate Game, Pokemon X / Pokemon Y, Animal Crossing New Leaf, Ni No Kuni, Fire Emblem Awakening, Dive Kick, Zelda, Albo, A Link Between Worlds.
Zelda albino version.
We have a second nominee for Dive Kick. Dive Kick was just a limit. No more Dive Kick. Brothers, A Tale of Two Sons, Anti-Chamber, Gone Home, Phoenix Wright Dual Destinies, Super Mario 3D World, Tomb Raider, Rogue Legacy, Rayman Legends, and Tearaway.
Tearaway. Tearaway. Can I argue Rayman Legends first? Because I know that's not going to be it. I can say my piece, and then we can completely just cross it off.
Okay.
Does that sound good to you guys? So when I was playing this game, I thought to myself, this is... As far as I can comprehend, this is like the farthest that platformers of this ilk can go. And Jeff, you're distracting me.
Keep talking.
I think that, like, in terms of if you like the feel of the game, if you don't mind the floatiness, I feel like the level design is impeccable. I feel like the music is fabulous. I feel like they implement touch controls in an amazing way. And by the way, if you're interested in playing this game, I would highly recommend it on the Vita if you have it, or the Wii U secondarily, on anything that you can touch. It has the entirety of Origins in it, which is very interesting because you can play a level of Legends, and then you can go back and play level of Origins, and you can see how far they've even come from Origins, which I thought was already incredible.
So can I interrupt for a question? Or for a
yes.
second?
Yes.
So you said it has the entirety of Origins in it. So if you buy this, is it like you don't need to buy Origins?
I think so, because literally, I guess you have to like kind of sort of unlock Origins, but I unlocked it after maybe like an hour of play.
Huh. Wow.
So yeah, it's all in there. Tons of characters to choose from, tons of things to unlock. It's extremely difficult. If you're the kind of person who can't play a game because you need to get every single little thing, this is not the game for you. You have to let it go, as Griffin once told me.
it looked massive from what I saw of it. Like, it looks like there's just no shortage of things to do.
It's a huge game. The thing that's nice about it is the platforming itself is challenging, but it's really not punishing. The platforming itself is just kind of fun, and it kind of gets that like Sonic 2 feeling sometimes, where you're just kind of rolling through a level and it's just exciting. It's like, what are you going to see next? But what's hard is getting all of the extras. So that's why you have to be a little – you have to curb your OCD if you're going to play it. I think it's fabulous. I think it's worth a shot. If you don't like the floatiness, I don't think you'll get past that. So if you try it out and you're like, oh, I don't like the way this feels. But if you're like me and you really like the way that that feels right off the bat, then it just – the level design is fantastic and you should keep with it.
It seems like it has the Donkey Kong Country Returns thing where it has a lot of different kinds of collectibles, but only one kind matters. Is that true? Like, it seemed like you only had to get the 10 dudes and all the other ones don't really matter.
You only need to get the main dudes, and you don't need to get all the main dudes.
Okay.
If you want to unlock all the levels.
Okay.
If you want to get absolutely everything, I think that you need all the dudes.
I just hate how I can't get the super cool, like, disco dancing music at the end of every level. I just want that always.
That's why you have to get all the dudes. That's, like, their incentive. That's the carrot.
But don't you have to get all the lums to get the disco dancing?
You don't have to get all of them.
Okay.
You can get the vast majority of them.
Gotcha.
Yes. And that can be punishing for sure. But all in all, great game. But I've said my piece. We can cross it off. But I just think it's sad that it didn't make anyone's list. But when it was reviewed, it was like universally acclaimed. So I'm like, I just hope it doesn't vanish into obscurity and we never get another Rayman game.
Yeah, I don't know how it did. I mean, it's like, it's one of those things that, like you said, it's like a critical darling, but it's just kind of permanently under the radar and I don't really know why.
And that's probably their fault because it was initially supposed to release for the Wii U and then they changed their minds and now it's kind of staggered across 1,000 different platforms and they didn't market it well. So, yeah.
Yeah, I don't really know. I mean, I guess I understand because nobody owns a Wii U.
Right.
So, but yeah. I definitely see what you're talking about, Jamie. I don't know why. I mean, I wish either Griffin or I had played it because it's hard to agree on it being like in the top when we don't have our own impressions.
Mm-hmm. Did you guys play either the Rayman games for like the PS1, any of those?
I did not. Did you, Griffin?
Not to a point that I recalled them. Not that I have any affinity towards them.
I know that Rayman 2 is like beloved, right?
I liked Rayman 2. I actually loved Rayman 1. I think that is the... I loved that one, and that's the one that in my mind is like the classic. So, especially if you played them on the PS1 and you liked them... It's not only like a fantastic platformer, it'll tickle your nostalgia bone. So,
interesting.
Yeah.
I see someone is already. Is that you, Jamie, who's crossing it off?
No.
No, Griffin is removing it.
It is an honor to be nominated Rayman Legends.
I think you made your case for it. It's unfortunate that neither of us played it.
Agreed.
Try it out. Great touch. Great, like, touch controls. Just try it.
Since we're on the subject of making cases for games that only one of us played, I'll talk about Phoenix Wright because that's clearly not going to be making the top five either. So Phoenix Wright, it's the first Phoenix Wright game I've ever played, and I think Griffin had talked about Phoenix Wright a couple podcasts ago, and he was saying like, it's cool, but it doesn't, it has absolutely no regard for for how law works.
Yeah.
And that was really frustrating to Griffin, but I actually found it like absolutely hilarious and completely endearing. And it was just what I liked about it is it's got like it's very, I mean, I think this one wasn't made by the original creator, but it still has that feel of like it's like a visual novel game, but it's so exciting. And the gameplay elements that it does have to offer are so entertaining that it like manages to transcend just like the visual novel genre. And even though like there's not a ton of action going on, you just feel like you feel so much energy when you play it. And like, it's so full of character. Like there's all these animations everywhere and like all of like the prosecutors and the defense lawyers are so goofy and weird. And all the defendants and witnesses are really, they all have their own quirks and animations. And like, there's just like, it's so absurd. Like one of the prosecutors you face throughout the game is just a dude who's like on death row, but they let him prosecute cases. And like, he has like an air katana that he just like pulls out. He like whips his hand like he's pulling out a katana. And then like for some reason, the defense lawyer like gets cut. he reacts as if he's been cut by a katana. And it's just really funny and ridiculous like that. When the prosecution like presents a key piece of evidence that like makes it difficult for you to defend your client, like sometimes like one of the characters will just shout no, and it will be like 5 pages of no, and they'll have like a completely ridiculous look on their face, and like the screen will turn white. It's just like completely over the top and hilarious, and like
sounds very delightful.
It is very delightful, and it's like anime, but in the best, like most kind of wholesome and like entertaining, and like it definitely plays with like definitely uses stereotypes, but it's not in like a really like cheap and like cliche and boring way. It's just like so full of energy and so entertainingly written that it just manages to be like effortlessly charming the whole time. And I put it on my personal list for top games of the year. I think I had it like number 7 or something, but I finished it literally on New Year's Eve, like as the clock was striking down to midnight, because I was sick, and it was so addicting and so much fun. I just kind of downloaded it on a whim, and it's actually only $30 on the eShop, which is $10 cheaper than your average game, and I just had such a good time with it. I would really highly recommend it, and it definitely makes a complete mockery of the legal system. You go from being a defense lawyer to like prosecuting a faulty witness, and they never really explain how you switch over to the role of like prosecutor, but you just do.
So
but it's so entertaining.
I know, Jeff, you're okay with letting this one go. My question, yeah, I guess, about to you're giving Phoenix Wright Dual Destinies its due diligence, but do you think, like, if for a Phoenix Wright fan as yourself, would you say this is the best in the series, or does this thing do anything different than previous Phoenix Wrights?
I haven't played any other Phoenix Wrights. This is my first entry into the series. So, as I understand, because I've actually like started researching them, and I kind of want to pick up some of the older ones now.
Mm-hmm.
This is supposed to be a pretty solid entry with pretty fun cases.
Mm-hmm.
It introduces a new character I know who has a mechanic that centers around analyzing people's moods. It's very like Magical Girl, like she can hear people's hearts.
Yeah.
But it's also like a little bit grounded in reality. Like it doesn't feel so ridiculous. It doesn't feel so over the top that you don't even want to deal with it. Like some of the other skills, like that are carryovers from earlier entries, are like the main character can see something called psych locks or psyche locks, which are literally locks that appear on the screen, and you have to present evidence to unlock them, to unlock their hearts. So it's like her ability is it's no more ridiculous than any of the other abilities in the game. And like I said, it's just like consistently fun all the time. It rarely wears out its welcome. It's a very solid game. And I think, again, I'm not a fan, so I don't know where it stands, but it got very positive reception. You know, it's kind of from the general public. So I think that it's considered to be a good entry.
Interesting. I'm surprised that this is your first Phoenix Wright experience.
I know. It feels like something that I should have gotten into so long ago, especially because I loved Ghost Trick. It was like one of my top games of 2010 or whenever it came out.
For handhelds or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. And this definitely, it's the same as Ghost Trick. It's like, mostly visual novel, but the gameplay that's there is just so much fun, even though it has no right to be, really, because you're basically just presenting evidence. You're like clicking items at appropriate times, but it is so fun.
Whatever. Sissel and Missile, characters of the forever.
this is my first entry, but I highly recommend it. And again, it's maybe kind of unfair to put it on the list because it's, it's a sequel, and I don't know if it really adds significant new things in terms of mechanics and stuff, but I had a great time with it, so it makes my personal list.
That's all that matters.
Yes. So, and that's my 2 cents on Phoenix Wright, I think. So we can remove it if you so desire.
I'm cutting it right now.
No!
Objection!
5 pages of no.
No! All right.
They slam their fists on the desk so many times.
I'm
so surprised that you've just never had this experience with Phoenix Wright before. It's weird.
It's really funny. They just object to each other back and forth.
Yeah.
Anyway,
since we're everybody's in this, self-sacrificial mood of nominating things, I think I'll just pull off Shadowrun Returns right now.
Did either of us play that?
I played it. I love that game. I don't think it's game of the year, though, so go ahead, Griff.
Yep.
Talk about it, though. Tell me about it. I want to hear about it.
You guys played it, right? Did I give you both codes?
You gave
me a code, and I played a good amount of it.
Yeah.
You gave me a code, and I played not very much of it, but I am intending to return to it this year.
Well, it's...
I'm a grateful gift receiver.
No! Shadowrun Returns it was a Kickstarter project, so, I mean, that's always kind of a weird caveat to start with, but I think it needs to be said. I don't even know where to go. I mean, it's an isometric top-down tactical role-playing game with light exploration and a decent character builder. Like, it is everything that it promised to be, and it delivered on it really surprisingly. And it's cyberpunk, and I love cyberpunk. And it also has, like, magic and XCOM-style combat, so it's fucking awesome. Like... all the pieces of it fit together really nicely to make a freaking awesome video game. But do I think it does anything? I don't think it does anything novel, or it doesn't really, you know, do any of those one pieces really well. It's just a really fantastic little cohesive package.
So it's like a really solid game. And I think it's probably also noteworthy. You kind of mentioned this in your review, but you were a backer of this game on Kickstarter, mm-hmm. and that might play into one of our other categories.
Yeah. I paid a lot of money to get that game.
Yeah, so you definitely have that emotional piece, and right. I think it's because, you know, you're definitely right that it's like it sounds like it's a very solid title, but maybe it's elevated a little bit more by being, you know, a Kickstarter success.
Yeah, absolutely.
Story, so.
It's nice to have your horse win, you know. It's like you're betting on this thing to work out really well, and it does, and then it just makes it even more better.
Yeah,
I have no connection to it emotional, that is, and I really loved it. And I think it stands well on its own merits. And I think that it's interesting because it seemed to me like when I was playing it, as it was such a simple game. We don't really get games like that anymore. I remember thinking when I was playing it that I was having such a great time. And I didn't really care that when, like, I walked through some, like, drapes that were rendered in the game. I didn't really care that, like, they didn't, like, flutter and move apart. Like, I just kind of walked through them, like... It was like rough around the edges, but not in a
you're like
not
looking
in a
down
game.
From your ivory tower PC using Tress Effects bullshit, where you're like, look at that, look at that fucking curtain not moving.
Twin 570s
peasant game.
I wasn't used to it, and it was just so good, and it didn't need any of those frills. It was like refreshing. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was interesting.
Well, that sounds cool. I'm looking forward to checking it out in 2014. It's one of my many games on my backlog that I'm finally starting to tackle. So,
I don't know. Anyway. I think it's okay to go. It's certainly not one of the top five games this year, but hey, it's great and it's cheap and it's a ton of fun. And you can get it on iOS, and it seems like it would work really well there.
Yeah, I wish I had any Apple devices to take advantage of that with, but I don't.
Nah, computer works fine.
Hey, you guys want to buy me an iPad Air?
Nope.
No, thanks.
Hey, what about DMC? Talk up that game.
Oh, okay. So, okay. Everybody has cut one of their own and now just turning on me. All right.
just targeting the weak links.
Oh, shit. What's Tearaway doing on this list?
screw you.
Devil May Cry is... Again, I think it has a personal connection to me in that I've never liked Devil May Cry games before. They've never hooked me. The stylish action games are fun. And I, you know, since Bayonetta, I've started to appreciate them a little more. But this DMC, Devil May Cry reboot, is fantastic. I mean, from talking to people who are veterans of the series, you know, they say that this game takes all the pieces of the previous games and combines them into something really easy and approachable. I found that to be the case. Like, it's not daunting to jump into it immediately. You get a lot of tools at your disposal to have rad combos, which, I mean, depending on your skill level, you can make them almost infinite. But the game doesn't demand that from you. It's not like saying, you know, you need to have mastery of this system to do well in it. The story is a little, I mean, it's kind of silly, of course. It's a video game. The characters in it are really interesting. I think some of the acting done by the Ninja Theory mocap folks are a little shitty. Reminded me of Anakin Skywalker in the trilogy, the prequel trilogy, where just like really stiff and brooding and angsty and bullshitty. But it also had some of the coolest boss battles, had some of these really awesome sequences that combine like level manipulation with time dilation, and everything just like works within this world that they're presented to you. Like, it's like an M.C. Escher painting that just gets rendered askew, and then you're seeing reality, and then you're seeing this like fucked up mirror reality that is really that you're not just. You can see the assets and the pieces that were taken and then stretched and skewed to make this bizarro world.
But how will you respond to this criticism, which is that Dante's hair is wrong?
It's not, though. It's white.
It's wrong.
You can have it white.
It's wrong.
You can have it white.
It needs to look really stupid.
Griffin, I became accustomed to one thing, and then they changed it.
Yeah. That's horrible.
They changed the thing.
Well, it's not made by Capcom. It's not a Capcom game. And even still, like, the dudes that did Devil May Cry don't work at Capcom anymore, so...
You know. Also, frames.
What about frames?
There's not enough of them in a second.
What do you mean?
That's what computers are for, dummy.
Oh, you think it had a bad frame rate on console?
So the two things that people were really upset about with DMC were Dante's hair is wrong because it's emo cut instead of long and dumb.
Okay.
And 30 frames per second on consoles.
Fine. Doesn't matter.
So it's worst game of all time.
You can't notice if there's a low frame rate, and if that does bug you, play the PC version. It's supposed to be fantastic. As for the hair, those are the people that liked Dante in the first place, and those people are stupid, and their opinions are not valid.
Correct. You are correct.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I don't think I can win you guys over on DMC for being a top five game. Also, I don't think I can convince myself, but I know that, you know, for somebody who has despised the Devil May Cry series, this game has made me come to the franchise, enjoy it, want to look back at the lore, and kind of like, if I wasn't told that this game plays better than the previous games, I'd like to go back and play them. Mm-hmm. But I can't take that step backwards because this game was just so good. Like, it handled so well. Like, it is on a near Bayonetta level of action.
Wow. I actually own it for PC because someone gifted it to me, so I really owe it to myself to play it, but, you know. Whenever you have a Steam account, it's just the games. Just keep piling into it.
It's worthwhile. I mean, it's not a long game. Mm-hmm. It has some interesting characters. It has a great payoff at the end if you are even the most slightly familiar with the Devil May Cry story. But I just can't emphasize enough how good it feels to play that game. Like, everything just is at your... all your tools are at your fingertips. You're not, like, playing weird finger twister with the controller. You know, you can just do what you want to do immediately, and it looks fucking rad.
It sounds like they also, like, simplified it a lot, based on what I heard.
Yeah.
Just, like, they took out a lot of the extraneous weapons. They just removed some of the bloat.
Yep, certainly. Everything is a little bit more streamlined. They add in a few systems like this devil and angel sort of paradigm that you switch in and out of that changes like your weapons. Instead of you dancing around the D-pad to flip to Dante's briefcase space teleport machine gun, like everything's just there.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, I want to give it a shot. And I think even though like it maybe isn't top five, it's good just to kind of remind people of it because it's one of those games that, you know, came out in January or whatever, and, you know, nobody remembers it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it didn't even really do that well, probably because of the insane fan base. So it's something that just kind of people need to be reminded of it at least.
Yeah. Yep.
So good to bring it up for sure.
Gone. Get out of here. Cut. Hit the showers, chump.
You're dead.
All right. What's next? What can we cut?
I should probably argue for Tomb Raider.
Right. You sound like
See, I actually think it should be in, and if it were me making the list, it would be in my top five. But I understand, and also you guys haven't played it.
That's the only thing. I've seen it actually make a couple people's lists, and I'm wondering, what do you think that Tomb Raider does that like other, like, what does it do that's really special like talk about that. Or does I mean
if
maybe
this game was called anything but Tomb Raider, would it be better or worse?
It would probably. I don't think it would change really. I think. Okay. I think that I really. How? Let me think for a second. Okay, so what it does well is a lot of things that sound boring, right? It's just like mechanistically really solid. It's mm-hmm. paced really well. The second that you're bored doing something, you're doing something else. I think the story, while throwaway in terms of like the actual plot, is well implemented in terms of like when they feed you a little bit of the story, how they feed you that story. They don't just do it in cutscenes. They do it in dialogue that plays out as you're moving across a field of enemies, so on and so forth. There is a decent level of suspense with the story that they managed to keep up. And what the game does that I think I think the game makes a lot of really small advances that other games should employ. Mm-hmm. For example, like I talked about this when we were talking about the game initially, but I've never seen like fast travel slash just making it easier to go through the environment once you've made it through the first time implemented better anywhere than in this game by both just straight up fast travel, which you can do if you want to, but it's kind of like takes you out of a game whose sole purpose is exploration.
Sure.
And to fix that, they've implemented this great system of like pulleys, and she has this like little motorized like pulley thing, and like it's after you go through like this epic thing of like unlocking an area, she'll string up these ropes, and it just makes it really easy but not far-fetched for you to like zip around these huge landscapes.
That's
and
really
so it
cool.
kind of maintains that feeling of exploration even after you've done everything there is to do in an area. If you get fed up or if you're on one side of the island and you need to get over the other side and you're just not in the mood, fast travel is there for you. But this system, this really like subtly implemented system is also there. And like I said, I think they made some advances in the story. The story is by no means like amazing. She does walk away from some things that no one should walk away from, especially if they didn't paint her as a superhero, right? If they were like, Lara Croft is a superhero, suspend your disbelief. Mm-hmm. None of this stuff would have bothered me, but that wasn't what they were going for.
No, they so quote-unquote kind of were going for a little bit of baby fat to make you want to protect her more.
Exactly. And I think that's a valid argument, Griffin, why you didn't play it and so on. But yeah, like they want you to fear for her, but she'll like fall off a 50-foot cliff onto like spikes and break a rib, and then in 30 seconds she's fine. So it's kind of like...
What are the stakes?
Also, isn't there just these like odious, lingering, horrific death animations that just kind of zoom in and out on her, and some like voyeuristic, sort of disgusting fetishization of her dying in these nasty manners?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't get that. That's weird.
That is true.
Somebody was getting boner parts from that. Can I say something though, Jamie? I bought it for $10 in the Steam sale, so I will play it.
Nice. I'd say it's worth more than $10, but less than 50.
Okay.
I think it's really, really good, and I think that a lot of games could be better if they implemented interesting concepts from this game. And I also really like the way that they implement the optional material. Discovering the optional material is fun in and of itself. And then when you actually enter these optional caves that you find, it's even more fun. I wish the game was a little harder. I wish the puzzles were a little more complex. But besides that, I think it's a really good game, and I hope it's going to get a sequel. We know that, so I hope the sequel builds on it and builds on the difficulty level, fleshes out the story, drops the "I have to be protected" thing, and if it does those things, I think that it might be like a really epic game that definitely will make, you know, 2014's list.
It seems like another one of those games that just, it came out early and it got overshadowed so quickly. But I remember looking at a Let's Look Out for it, and there just was some cool stuff going on. Like I really liked when you save at fires, how she like talks to herself and like gives herself a little pep talk. It just seemed to be full of like little flourishes like that, which just like little bits of polish here and there that really kind of I don't know. That's it seems like it would tie it together.
It's indescribable. Like the thing that that sticks out to me the most is how in the beginning of the game, like you'll be in a huge clearing and there'll be two enemies on the other side of the clearing and they're intimidating you. And she's either not saying anything back to them or she's just kind of whimpering to herself. And it's well acted, so you kind of feel like you're there. And then towards the end of the game, there'll be a clearing and there's like 10 enemies on the other side and they're like screaming to each other, "We're going to kill her." And then you're screaming back at them because, I don't know, you've grown as a fierce woman, I guess. I don't know. But it's like,
because
it's cool.
You killed
cool
a deer things. And cried.
Wait, do you cry after killing a deer?
I don't remember.
There is a notorious part of that game where you're supposed to commiserate with Laura after she makes her first kill, and she she has this moment where she kills somebody, and then she has this breakdown, and then immediately she's like, "I'm gonna fucking kick your ass." You know, it's just it goes from black to white with this one little like interstitial piece of story and character development that you're like, oh, okay, so you did this voice acting thing kind of in two pieces, didn't you?
It's just really fun, though. I have great memories of like, you know, these old villages being burned down and you're kind of running across the rooftops and like you're I have these great memories of where
yeah, aren't you supposed to have like PTSD from this whole experience?
she does.
Yeah, maybe.
But, I think that's definitely worth a try. It's a solid game.
Yeah, and I definitely, you know, I will be playing it at some point in this new year.
Cross it off.
I've been tempted. I've been to some red boxes, looked at that screen, and been like, maybe I'll just break down and go against my word and play this game.
You should.
But
we should all play it.
I haven't. I have to stand strong with my convictions.
Well, I'm going to play it. I'll play it, Jamie, and I will. I have a feeling I'll have a great time with it because it looks fun.
Yeah, it's so. you have the right attitude about it. It's not
Laura can take care of her own hair.
Put on those Tress FX. That's the funniest thing. Now, like, my computer can totally handle that, but when it came out, oh god, it brought it to its knees. It was terrible.
But and it also looks like a spaghetti monster, right?
Spaghetti monster, yes.
All right, it's off.
What's Tearaway doing on this list, guys?
For some people, that was their game of the year, and I don't feel that I'm far enough into it to really have a strong opinion. But Jamie, how far did you end up getting?
I'm not very far either, but it's what I have played is so good that I wanted to put it on there, especially because of the complete 180 I did when I was playing it. Because at first, I really didn't see what people were talking about. I hated the way that it controlled. But what I didn't realize was that I hadn't like unlocked all of the controls.
Yes.
And that happens not slowly, but you play for, you know, I don't know, 20 minutes without the ability to jump.
Yeah.
And that was kind of infuriating. But then but there's like a reason for that. And when they introduce that mechanic for the first time, they do it in a way that no other game has. And by delaying giving you the jump, they buy so much fun. Like the pressing the bottom of the PS Vita to jump for that second level, I believe, that is so much fun. I almost wish they never let you have jump, so that you would always have to jump that way. It's like every little thing they introduce is just so much fun and so well implemented, and it seems like it's such a deep game and there's so much to it. There's the whole papercraft thing that you can do online if you want, and it just suckers you in with its obscene adorableness.
It seems like a game that is like, it's the rare title that is like completely optimized for the hardware it's made on, like just like down to the core.
It's
like
the whole Buffalo, you know, of the Vita.
Exactly, yeah. And you just don't see that so much anymore with, like, you know, multi-platform titles, or just, you know, it's kind of a Nintendo thing, really, to do that level, like that low level optimization, and also just like using all the features of the hardware in like the most perfect way possible. And I think that's so commendable. And I think also, I mean, it's amazing how small the team was. I think it was just like 8 people or something made this entire game. Yeah.
Media Molecule, right?
It's a small team. It's just a small part of Media Molecule. So it's not even like there was a huge budget for this game, but but it's definitely got a ton of love. You know, they're very confident in what they're doing. It's very charming. I like it. It hasn't been the kind of thing that's like immediately when I played it, I was like, wow, this is like among my top games of the year. But I'm definitely struck by how natural all of the implementations of Vita stuff feel. And that's like a console that has a lot of weird inputs on it.
Mm-hmm.
So for them to pull that off is definitely, it's definitely commendable. And it's definitely, I mean, if you have a Vita, you should get Tearaway because, mm-hmm. you know, like support Vita games already. And also enjoy all the cool features of your Vita and a game that actually realizes like usage ideas for them. So mm-hmm. it's definitely, yes. Again, it's definitely one of those things that's worth calling attention to, even if it's not like top yeah. of the list kind of thing.
Squirrel Crowns.
Squirrel Crowns?
Squirrel Crowns.
Oh, yes, Squirrel Crowns. Yes, you can give a squirrel a crown.
Dragon's Crown?
You can put lipstick on a pig.
Oh, really? Oh, Jamie, do yep. you want to add Dragon's Crown to this list? That's a great
idea. I didn't play Dragon's Crown.
Oh, okay, well...
We both played Dragon's... It's not Game of the Year material.
Yeah, so let's add it to the list. Game. That's a great game, and now it's been removed. fuck those art haters. That game is great.
Yeah, there's so many big boobies and big butts and mm-hmm. jiggly muscles, and yep. I don't think there are any dongs though, which is very sad.
I would like a pinup calendar of that game.
I have the art book. Did I sent you guys that picture from the art book?
Oh yeah,
of the sorceress with just like honey on her boobs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Japan.
All right. Somebody crossed Tearaway off. Wasn't me. So
I think it was Jamie. I'm okay just with that. Engaging in like self injury.
Yeah, just getting it over with.
Okay, I am going to as well make a cut. Assassin's Creed 4 is not one of the top 5 games this year.
What made you throw it on the list to begin with, Griffin?
Because it did because it was going to be on my top 10 list for 2013, but I got to a point in the game where I just got stuck and fed up. Like, playing through the main story, it's just the same silly missions that have always been Assassin's Creed over and over again. Like, eavesdropping, hiding out, not being detected while I'm trying to kill a certain individual. And then finally, you know, you have, like, the higher points, which is, like, you know, the ship battles and the exploration of the cities and how easy they've made climbing and how they've totally changed like the way you navigate environments. It's a lot faster, a lot easier. And they totally redeemed the franchise from the abomination that was Assassin's Creed 3. Made an interesting or a fun character. Like they just made the game fun again and not mm-hmm. up its own ass. The interstitial bits with going and being in the fake Ubisoft, what do they call it? Abstergo Entertainment video, where you're a video game programmer who's like a part of this world they've already created and established. Abstergo, who's like this evil, like tyrannical empire of like Illuminati working beneath the surface to control people and.
Everything I saw of the Abstergo, which is pretty much just like that introductory video before the multiplayer mm-hmm. And the limited stuff I saw in game, it seems so delightfully campy.
Yep, yeah. Multiplayer is still good. Still the same multiplayer. If you liked Assassin's Creed multiplayer, like there's
I love
nothing
that
different besides just a million Uplay gates. It makes some good use of the PlayStation 4 controller with the touch stuff. The sea shanties are top-notch. Driving the boat around the world was well done compared to 3, which it was just kind of like a deviation. I think it does a lot of things really well. I just think that it suffers so much from this like decrepit design that defines Assassin's Creed that I cannot justify it being like a top 5 game this year because it suffers so heavily from that old stagnant design.
Gotcha. Can I ask 2 questions?
No. Is that what's
question,
okay? So that was
question number one. Okay. No. You shut your mouth. Question number one. Do you think they will ever spin off like the ship parts of the game and just ditch all the less fun parts of the game and maybe even like do a new genre or like a side story that just kind of eliminates all of like the cruft and the bad stuff? Or
I think we're seeing it. I think in Assassin's Creed 3, they introduced the ship. It was really fun piloting it. Being the captain was really cool when they did have those moments. And now this essentially is the spinoff where you could completely throw the Assassin's Creed story out the window and just drive around being a badass pirate and have a great time with that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we're living in that age.
Okay.
The age of pirates.
But hopefully, I mean, hopefully they can maybe even get to a point where they discard the stuff that's just getting tired altogether.
No, because now, I mean, now if there's more boats, now it'll hit that stagnation point of like, oh, great.
I see.
It's a
I
bigger
see.
Map with more boats, okay, more okay. stealth so, boats.
So that could just as easily get played out as your thinking on that.
Certainly, yeah.
Okay, and then question number two is, can we all play more of that multiplayer this year, please?
Yes.
Yes! Yes!
I'm at least excited. I will with you.
Yes, I'm so excited.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay, that's all I had to
it's
ask.
It's the only PlayStation 4 game I've purchased.
It is the only PlayStation 4 game I retain.
Mm-hmm. Same.
That
same
I have purchased.
Season. I think it's,
I sold it's, Killzone.
Yeah, it's just one of the best games to have on a current gen console because it works so well with the controller. It showcases that next gen like fidelity. It has the online functionality, you know, the jump in co-ops or multiplayer stuff. Like it's just kind of like your bread and butter for launch, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like it's of all the launch titles, at least for PS4, it's probably the one to get if you don't already have it on a previous platform.
Right. And you don't like driving.
Yeah. Yeah.
But all right, it's cut. Get out of here.
Screw you, Assassin's
Creed. Freaking garbage. Everything I said is lies.
Griffin, talk about Dive Kick because I've never played that one.
Oh, we can both talk about that. That made both of our lists.
It did.
I don't recall where you put it, Griffin, but I had it at number nine. Yeah. But let's talk about Dive Kick. Dive Kick is everything that. Okay, it's a fighting game that takes all the shit I hated about fighting games and just gets rid of all that and just. It only has two buttons, so in a sense, you can get into this game. You can learn like the central mechanics, which are simply jumping and kicking, in you know less than an hour, and just like that, you are in the metagame.
Yep.
So it's basically like it takes all of the stupid shit and the elitism out of fighting games.
Right. Combo memorization, input mastery.
Yeah, I mean, it's still there because, you know, you have to understand, you know, the geometry and stuff with your character, but you're no longer limited by, like, your inability to perform a particular, you know, like a quarter circle or something, or the Z pattern. And it's like the freaking Z pattern was the bane of my existence in the Street Fighter era. And to go into this game where you can literally just have a giant panel with two big buttons on it that you can hammer away at to play it, it's, like, so refreshing. And so accessible and awesome. Mm-hmm. And for me, I didn't really care about the puns, although they're kind of cute. And I think that the game was actually held back a little bit by some of the extra characters.
I agree.
Like I think that Baz, for example. So there's this character, Jamie, who he has an odd mechanic where
start at the beginning. So essentially, you have two characters, Dive and Kick. One, every character can jump into the air, and then they also can fall out of the air in a kick.
You have your two vanilla characters, Dive and Kick, and Dive is like better at jumping and Kick is better at kicking. And those are like the two best characters in the game. And then after them, there's like a lot of gimmick characters. And those are kind of what hurts the game in my opinion. And I didn't mean to cut you off, if you can keep talking about
it. I agree. Yeah.
Okay.
I think the gimmick characters it creates more depth for people who want to play the game competitively, but I think it then also hurts the game's initial design by creating artificial depth.
Yeah, it kind of corrupts. Not corrupts, but it takes away from the initial pure concept a little bit. Mm-hmm. I think the game
muddies the waters.
Yeah, it's at its most pure fun when you're just playing as two dudes with slightly different qualities that basically are pretty simple to figure out. You can just jump and kick. But then you get these other characters, like I was saying, Baz, who his hitbox when he attacks is not actually his kick, but it's like a trail of lightning that his kick leaves behind. Mm-hmm. That's like his attack hitbox or whatever. So like he's like a really technical and weird character, and he's kind of a noob killer. And it's just like it's not that fun to play against a dude who doesn't quite follow the rules of the game and kind of just it makes things complicated. I think Griffin said he kind of muddies the water a little bit. And then there's these other characters who have like weird things, like they can fly, and you have to kind of do this weird thing with the kick button to make them fly right or something.
Right. Every character has two special moves that are based on how much kick meter you generate, which again adds another layer on top of their original design of like the most pure and simple, easily approachable meta game to fighting games. And I mean, they're cool. And when you spend time like working through them and figuring out what they do, it does make some delightful variety in the game. Mm-hmm. But it also, it just, I think it hurts it more than it helps it.
Well, I think that in the case of the specials, I think they were a good idea. And I think, again, they work well on Dive and Kick because, you know, Dive has a diving special and Kick has a kicking special. So it's kind of self-explanatory. It fits with the characters. It makes sense. But when you get to some of the more oddball characters, their specials are really weird. Mm-hmm. And like they recall fighting game, they recall like strange fighting game mechanics. Like one character has a special that's based on finding items in the environment. It's kind of like a callback to like Phoenix Wright and Marvel vs. Capcom and other characters like that. And it's like, well, that's cool if like you're in the fighting game scene and you understand that type of mechanic. But it's something that I don't want to have to think about finding items in a game that's supposed to just be about diving and kicking. Like, it's just a little bit too technical.
It's
a little bit too
Smash Bros.
No way. Smash Bros is
the worst abomination to fighting games.
I will defend Smash Bros. To the death.
That is a different discussion for a different time.
No, the first Smash Bros.
Is
the worst.
The first one's the best.
Stop it.
No,
stop it.
You're wrong.
Stop it.
we're going to kill each other.
It's called Smash Bros. Stay on
target.
okay, fine. We're not going to talk about Smash Bros. It's just the best fighting game.
Are we taking Dive Kick off? We're narrowing it down to five, right?
Yeah.
That's our goal here. So are we taking Dive Kick off for the top five?
I think we probably are. What do you think, Griffin?
I'm okay with it going because I think there are five better games on this list than Dive Kick.
Yeah, it is a fantastic game and you should play it. It almost was the perfect realization of this concept. It's held back by a few key features, but still worth your time.
Right. Another Kickstarter success story.
Kind of.
Yeah.
They kickstarted part of it, right?
They kickstarted it, and then they pulled it off Kickstarter because a publisher picked them up.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So, the best Kickstarter story ever.
Yes, what we wish had happened to Broken Age.
All right. So, let's take a little recap here. On the list now, we have BioShock Infinite, The Last of Us, Pokemon X and Y, Animal Crossing New Leaf, Ni No Kuni, Fire Emblem Awakening, Zelda A Link Between Worlds, Brothers A Tale of Two Sons, Anti-Chamber, Gone Home, Super Mario 3D World, and Rogue Legacy.
Looking at this list, I'm going to talk about Fire Emblem so that we can take it off.
Oh, interesting. It was in Griffin's top five,
Was it? Okay.
I don't think so.
I think it's a fabulous game. And it definitely deserves to be on our list for Game of the Year. But I think that, I personally disagree with Griffin. While I do think the writing was good, I don't think it was spectacular. And I actually found myself, just pressing the button to get through a lot of the dialogue, especially the optional dialogue. Mm-hmm. I do love the mechanics of the story, it like worked with like the dialogue. There's a lot of like interesting, it seems to me, permutations that this, like a lot of ways the story could have gone, and each way would have been equally interesting.
Yeah.
That game must have like
character interactions
like who you marry, who you have a kid with. That game must have like a bazillion different like ways that it could go. Mm-hmm. And it was just like really well implemented. It didn't seem random. It seemed like the story should have been the way that it was for me, and I'm sure it was that way for most people who played it. But and I think that the mechanics were absolutely solid. It was like one of the best most fun tactical RPGs I've ever played. I was telling you guys about how I loved how towards the end of the game, and especially in the optional missions, it becomes this kind of thing of like you're just running across the board. Mm-hmm. It's not you're trying to mop everything up. You're literally just trying to finish and do the objective, mm-hmm. which kind of sets it apart from other games, and you really change your tactics because you're no longer thinking like, how can I take out each enemy on this map? It's like, how can I defend my core characters and get them across the map so that they can carry out, like, you know, the finishing move.
Yeah.
And I think that's really fun, really interesting. At the same time, it might have dragged on a little bit, and I think that they could have iterated even more. I always felt the need, like, they were like dangling some amazing concept in front of me, and they would carry it out like only like 90%, and I was like, there should have been more, you know, maps like that one, or they should have done this with this map. But I mean, fantastic game, but I feel like it didn't take the tactical RPG crown from Tactics.
Well, that's certainly true. I mean, those are different genres, though.
Yeah.
I think.
Final Fantasy Tactics in this game?
Slightly different genres. Very slightly.
Right.
Just, no.
No. No, you don't think so? Okay.
No, I think that this game, more so than any other game, any other tactical RPG, has separated itself from the king and kind of made its own thing. And Jamie, I think what's really interesting is how differently... I don't know, Jeff, how you played this game, but I know that, Jamie, you and I had a very different philosophy when we were playing this game. I know that I constantly, like, my units were never not paired. I always had them together, and you had told me that you never really paired them, like, one on top of the other one. And I think that that pairing mechanic is what separates this game out to be such a fantastic video game in terms of tactical RPG design, because that pairing also ties in with the character interactions directly. And that character interaction is what fueled my playing it. My interest in the game is like, you know, if I keep these guys together long enough, not only do they have like an increased ability bond because of their time they've spent together, like they improve each other's numbers, attack, defense, whatever. But they also grow in terms of storytelling. Like they have interactions with each other. They have dialogue. They grow in terms of their personal relationships with each other because of how much time on the battlefield they spend together. So that was a major motivating factor to me in how I made my unit choices and how I interacted in a battlefield. Like who I put together, how that changed my style of play. You know, and even having like that kind of dating sim mechanic where you're like, you know, having children and pairing people up and watching that relationship bloom.
Yeah. I was just going to say, I kind of came at this game from the perspective, I've played a lot of other Fire Emblem titles, and I've also played Advance Wars, like almost every Advance Wars title that's made it stateside, which is Intelligent Systems' other major property, which is also a tactical RPG. And so my basic... Let me talk about... So I didn't put this on my list, even though I like the game a lot. Because, first of all, it's not... Between Fire Emblem and Advance Wars, I've always liked Advance Wars more. And I'll explain why in a sec. But even among Fire Emblem titles, this actually was not my favorite Fire Emblem title. And the reason why... kind of speaks to the reason why I like Advance Wars better than Fire Emblem, which is because... you mentioned the pairing, Griffin. And the pairing kind of contributed to a problem for me, which is that... Fire Emblem kind of feels like a game of extremes. Either your unit is very underleveled and very weak, or your unit is incredibly powerful. And what happens in almost every Fire Emblem game is there's that dude who's really strong, and pretty much they soak up all the battle experience because you put them in the middle of the battlefield to sponge hits from like 10 different dudes, and they hit, you know, they cap, you know, at level 20, while all your other weaker dudes are just kind of hanging back and waiting for that dude to mop up. So you kind of end up with a really unbalanced situation in almost every Fire Emblem game just because of the way the mechanics work and just the way that certain units are just better than others, or just maybe more versatile, or just more tankish. And I found that in this game, there was so much going on, like so many characters, so many ways to unbalance the game. It just felt kind of like a game of like excess. I just felt like there was just too much, and I won't say that it felt bloated, but it was just too much for me, and it was too unbalanced and too too weird. Like I had a really strong unit and a really weak unit, and I'm the kind of person who like tries to rectify these situations. So I'd level stuff up and try to kind of balance everything out. And I did a lot of grinding outside of story battles.
So do I.
I also played on a high difficulty.
I was making a joke.
Oh, okay. Well, I also played on a high difficulty. So like I tried to really like, you know, amp up the challenge and stuff like that. But I just found that the experience is very like lopsided in a Fire Emblem game. And this game took the thing that I don't like about Fire Emblem, which is that it's very lopsided, and just turned that up more than ever before. And it also really anime-ified the storyline a lot. And you know, the game was never too far away from being an anime storyline, but it definitely took things even farther in that direction, which was a departure that I kind of liked in a kind of like, oh, this is comfortable and fun way. But I kind of didn't like, because I felt like in some ways it I won't say that it took away from what makes Fire Emblem Fire Emblem, because it didn't really. And I think that this game is kind of the new identity of Fire Emblem now, but it just wasn't quite what I was looking for. And I think the reason I usually go towards Advance Wars, and I really especially like the most recent Advance Wars entry, which did this kind of bold thing, which is kind of pare back a little bit. It cut out a lot of the excess that kind of showed up in the Dual Strike game. Did either of you play Dual Strike? I think you did, right, Jamie? It's the first DS Advance Wars?
Yes.
Yeah. So that game was a fun... That game had the same kind of problem that I felt Fire Emblem did, which is... You get a ton of different characters, tons of them are broken. It just really unbalances the game and creates these very lopsided experiences. I think you may recall that you could do like double CO powers in that game, and you could just completely like push the game in one direction, like take it completely off balance. And in the most recent Advance Wars game, they stripped a lot of that out, and it made just a much more interesting and kind of depth-filled experience for me, because you could just use any unit and they all had their place. And I found that in Fire Emblem that just wasn't as much the case for me, and that's kind of what I look for in a strategy game. I want to have use for everything, and I didn't get that as much with Fire Emblem. It just felt very, like I said, lopsided. So that's why it didn't personally make my list, but it's still a fantastic game.
I think that I've heard that enough that I don't doubt it. I didn't feel that way because like you were saying how like you would have your big badass in the middle of the field and how he would soak everything up. But the way that the maps were, especially towards the end of the game, the enemies weren't coming down the front and center. They weren't marching like – they weren't coming at you like a softball. They were spawning from everywhere. So at least towards the end of the game, you really did have to have – you couldn't just rely on that one guy. I thought it was weird in other ways. Like I thought it was weird how my people would get to 20 – and then I'd like use that item to get them back down to 1 because there might be some more stats to mine out of them. But it was arbitrary how many levels after that initial 20 they would have before they were just maxed out. Some characters max out at 20. Some characters don't. It's kind of odd that way.
Yeah, but, well, there are rules, but they're hard to understand if you're not like following a guide.
Yeah.
I'd say that you are right, Jamie. They definitely mitigated that a little bit with some of the later battles, just like making it so you have to defend 3 areas instead of 1. You know, you got enemies coming from 3 different sides. Mm-hmm. And that made sort of some really interesting and challenging situations. And especially in the higher difficulties, I think that kind of mitigated a little bit what I'm talking about, because you needed a lot of strong characters.
Right. But and again, with the optional objectives like recruiting other people and having to move really quickly through a level or defending things and trying to maximize your rewards from a battle, like, yes.
Yeah.
There was enough diversity in the level design that it kept things fresh.
Yeah, definitely. It's still a very solid title. And, I've loved every kind of intelligent systems game that I've touched that does this strategy stuff. So it's not bad by any stretch of the word. But it's... I think that it's kind of the game that introduced a lot of people to Fire Emblem and strategy RPGs in general. I think people didn't really play Fire Emblem or Advance Wars before this game. So because of that, it's getting a lot of praise. But I'm kind of coming at it from a series vet perspective, so I'm going to feel a little differently than other people.
Yeah.
So
Go on, Griff.
Oh, I was going to say, I think that Jamie and I, you and I probably have the similar experience where we're not Fire Emblem veterans. We don't know how that game has acted in the past and how this differentiates from it. And I think that's why I really like this, kind of in the same way that Devil May Cry, I think, did a lot of awesome things to bring in new players and refine systems and make things approachable for new players. I think this Fire Emblem game did the same thing. And Jeff, as you were saying, you had like one big, you had your one big, you know, rock character that you could kind of always depend on. What I really liked was the pairing system and how you could take that one really powerful character, put him with somebody who may have been a little weaker, who you wanted to, you know, either form a relationship with or give them a little bit of backup in battle. Or, as pathetic as it sounds, like in my own little video game story that was happening while I was doing this, like, it's like, oh, this guy was just on the battlefield protecting this person who was weaker, and then they had this budding romance that happened. Like, it's that kind of like storytelling that happens that I think is really fascinating, and then also that the game acknowledges it, and that you can kind of balance out your own units if you're utilizing that mechanic.
Yeah.
But I agree, you get hell of powerful by the end of it. And Jamie, when you're saying you're running towards the end of the game, I was not. I was there picking the legs off the ants and watching them squirm as I was going to the final boss to slowly murder him. Like, it's health chunk by health chunk. Like, my characters were just so overpowered. And that's what I really like. That's why I didn't really like Advance Wars, because, you know, you could get steamrolled so quickly because of an enemy AI just kind of utilizing everything to their advantage and having a good luck turn, or just being better than me. And, you know, if I could grind and I could pair my units correctly and kind of build these overpowered units, like, yeah, it's like me playing StarCraft. Like, I just build a million battle cruisers and then throw them at the enemy. Like, that's really cathartic, and that's why I liked Fire Emblem Awakening.
Did you play after the new game? What do they call it? Super end game?
Post game missions.
Post game missions. Yeah. Griff.
Maybe I don't remember.
Those are really hard. Okay. I remember also the last battle. Like, I didn't have to try multiple times. I didn't die. And then when I did make it to the final boss, it wasn't like an epic battle. I just kind of killed him. Mm-hmm. But I still remember those battles as being exciting.
Yeah,
and I do remember like the battles that come after that, the optional ones after you beat the game, are actually punishing, and just huge waves like you wouldn't believe, and really challenging. Jeff, did you play them?
I actually did not. I will say, on the highest difficulty that is available when you start, which I don't remember what it was, even if you grind, which I did a lot, like, the later battles are just not a pushover at all. Mm-hmm. They are very hard, even with a fully, you know, high spec team. So the difficulty never really lets up. But again, I think you made a good point, Griffin. I think that Advance Wars is kind of always been the more, or at least when I think it's at its best, it's like the most balanced and the most depth, but it's not accessible, and that you can't grind to overcome challenges.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this, I will say, this is an RPG. Yeah. That's a tactical, like, strategy game.
Yeah. I mean, I think of them as the same genre with a tiny twist. But yes, you're right, Griffin. And I will say one thing that Fire Emblem Awakening did, which is really cool, which I think they should do in all the remaining Fire Emblem entries, is they made support much, much more accessible. Support in the older games was like a hot mess. I don't even know how it worked, and now it's really easy, and you will get supports all the time, and I really like that they kind of buffed that element of the game big time, because that's really fun, just getting all those supports.
All right. I am highlighting Fire Emblem Awakening to strike it off, because I think everybody can agree that story was absolute horse garbage.
Kill it with fire.
It was the Get Backers-ification of a storyline where by the end of it, everybody is like, hey, I'm alive. I was alive the whole time. Isn't that funny? And you're like, you just completely downplayed your entire dramatic moment. Well done.
Mr. No Break?
What?
No Break. loved that show. Loved it.
I never watched it.
It was horrible.
Okay, let's take a look. We're getting closer to where I feel like I'm gonna have to defend some of my choices.
Okay.
I think I found the next target, and all right, Tell me if you guys agree.
What is it?
I highlighted it.
Disagree.
Yeah. I agree with you.
I don't agree.
Talk it up, Griffin. Tell me about Rogue Legacy.
Well, if nobody else is gonna back me,
gotta make your case for
it. I can throw it off right now because it wasn't on my top 10 list. I didn't play it until recently because it's only on PC. I didn't beat it, so therefore I can't include it on my own list. but it is it is a roguelike, which everybody likes. It is whimsical in that there are funny bits to it. It's an amazing platformer. It has the tightness of something like the Symphony of the Night. It has persistent upgrades as you're progressing through the game. The unique little mechanic is you're playing the story of a hero who is guaranteed to die, essentially, and then your offspring continues. They look exactly like you, essentially, and play exactly like you for the most part, except they have different stats and a handful of different genetic traits. And this is where the whimsy comes in. You could have a character that doesn't have 3D vision, like they're stereoscopically impaired. And anytime they move or rotate or something rotates in the world, it's like a Paper Mario flip as the sprite itself, you know, has this flop as it's turning around, or they're colorblind and the world is just in black and white, or they have IBS and they just fart every time they jump, or they're gay and it doesn't do anything or affect anything at all. Like there are some really, really just funny things in there. And then there's also game breaking things, like where it's like, oh, this person doesn't have a great, lower extremity, pulse or whatever, like Jamie, so
traps,
help me out here.
Traps don't go off. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. You got like
more circulation or
something. Yep, thank you. Yep, that's what we're looking for. And they become a better character to play as because you don't have to worry about, like you said, pressure activated traps.
And the cool thing is you don't you have three choices every time you play, but you don't get to choose what those three choices are. So like you might be stuck with a negative trait for that round.
Right. Right. But it also doesn't matter because, you know that there's no negative side to dying. You just can pick another dude later. And it's more of a lost opportunity to gain more gold, progress further through this dungeon. And the dungeon's randomly generated each time, but it has like four main compass directions of up, down, left, right. And there's different kind of worlds associated with each direction. And then, you know, as you gain more money through doing this stuff, you can upgrade your own castle keep and increase your own abilities to an absurd amount. It's just a really freaking great game. Action platformer, roguelike.
Yeah, I think it's an incredible game. And I'm glad that they're finally rolling it out to consoles and all that good stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I don't even think it, like, gets old. It's really... I still want, like, the second we started talking about it, I was like, oh man, I should play this right now while we're talking.
See, and, I do think it gets old personally. I don't think it has the legs. I'm the guy who spent 300 hours in Binding of Isaac, and I just can't see myself spending. I'm very particular about roguelikes, and I don't think it has the legs and like the it factor of other roguelikes. But
well,
that's
Jeff,
just...
this is a roguelike,
Yeah, so it's not a roguelike. It's a roguelike.
I like you, but I don't roguelike you.
Jamie, I know you also described it as having bullet hell elements one time, and I kind of didn't understand that until I went into playing it myself, and I think that's a really apt description. Like, your character is very fragile. You're going into environments where there are patterns, there are attack patterns that kind of can occasionally fill the screen with death-triggering fireballs, or just simply like one-on-one fights with a single enemy, they'll have certain patterns and movements that you can dodge and navigate to win.
It's balls hard.
It is, but it also isn't.
Yeah, I mean, it's once you get good, you definitely get better. But it's a tough game. It doesn't pull any punches.
I'd like to make a correction. Jeff said that he's played over 300 hours of The Binding of Isaac. Jeff has actually played 386 hours.
Are you serious?
The Binding of Isaac, and he has played 44 hours of Spelunky.
Well, that's not counting the freeware time I've played it, and also the Vita version, which I've played a ton of. I've done most of the accomplishments on the Vita version.
Well, how many hours do they say it takes to become an expert? Is it 1,000 or 10,000?
I think it might be 1,000. Is that like a Gladwell thing?
So, Jeff, you have quite a few hours to go.
I've gotten every achievement in Binding of Isaac. I got Golden God.
Okay. I've removed Rogue Legacy from the list.
Great game. Great game. I think we're down to our top 10, right? I think awesome. We have 10 now. 1, 2, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Yep. Wow. We have more on that list than I thought. Okay.
Can we like save those 10 or can I'll read them out now for posterity's sake.
Right,
BioShock perfect. Infinite, The Last of Us, Pokemon X and Y, Animal Crossing New Leaf, Ni No Kuni, Zelda, Brothers, Antechamber, Gone Home, Super Mario 3D World, and what a great year this was. This is an amazing year.
Definitely, yeah. It just like spoiled for choice for like fantastic games. All of these could be number one on someone's list.
Yeah. Easily. It's going to be hard to get down to 5. I'm going to fire a shot at you guys. I'm going to fire 2 shots.
Fire them.
One I have experience with, one I have none. I'm going to fire my first shot at Pokemon X and Y. And
fuck
I'm going to fire my
get out of here.
I'm going to fire my second shot at
disconnect this phone
New
call.
So let me talk to you about what the same thing that happens to me with every Pokemon game since Red and Blue happened to me with Pokemon X and Y. It looks incredible. It looks so different. And then I play it and it's exactly the same. And that's the reason why everyone loves it. But it's the same reason why I just get bored of it in like 20 hours. It's like I can't play anymore. I just don't find it engaging. And I think there are a few simple changes they could make to bring this into the 21st century. But they refuse to change it. Because it would piss off too many people, which I understand, but it could be so much more.
Jamie, by that same argument, I will happily cross Animal Crossing New Leaf off this list right now.
Okay,
yeah, I think Animal Crossing is the weak link that is probably gonna die.
I think everything that you said, I 100% agree with. If you're saying that about Animal Crossing.
Sure, I never played the game, so
easy done.
It. Yeah,
but do you never feel bored playing Pokemon? Honestly, how long can you do the same fight over and over again for before you get just bored to tears?
Approximately 80 hours.
I love Pokemon. I will never get sick of that game. But let's just quickly before we go to Pokemon, Animal Crossing
is due.
Yeah, let's give it its due. I will say that Animal Crossing is a game that I loved for 1 month, and then I didn't love it anymore. And the reason is this. Animal Crossing, when you first start the game, there's so much cool shit to do. But then over time, like, all that cool shit runs out. Like, most of the coolest shit has a very short shelf life. Like, you can only do it for, let's say, the first week or 2 weeks of the game. And then by, like, your third week of gameplay, and this is supposed to be, you know, a game that has very long legs and you play for like, years, you know. But by your third week of gameplay, like, all I'm ever doing by that point is fishing and catching bugs. It's like, that's kind of fun, but it just...
And it's interesting because when both you guys and, you know, everyone else in games journalism was trying to explain why this game was so fabulous when it first came out, they would say what you just said. I'm just catching bugs, man, and I'm totally into it. And there's no explanation for why I'm into it, but I am. Mm. And then, you know, a month later, it's like,
I mean, look,
catching bugs.
But, I mean, getting a month out of any game is fantastic. So
yeah.
it's not like I even remotely regret New Leaf.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Having it, like, on my console is great. And, you know, if I want to come back, I can. And I'll probably have some fun with it. But it is a game that they nailed the early game. They nailed all that stuff. But I just wish they had a few more unique events. I wish they didn't blow their load all at once, pretty much. I feel like that's kind of what happens with that game. I think that it's front loaded with the fun and the wow moments, and it's just too easy to unlock everything. And then you're like, what do I do now?
Agreed. So. Like the carrot on the stick eventually runs out. Like that drive to keep moving forward to get more stuff, to get more stuff, to get more stuff, to get more stuff. Like that, it gets tired.
Yeah.
But when it's happening, it's great. It's fantastic. Like, you're having a wonderful time with it. I know I did. I was loving going through the day-to-day nonsense, like the big events that were happening, like the bug-catching contest, or when my real-life birthday happened in the game, and they, like, invited me into their dumb little house and had a dumb cake, and I had to blow at my 3DS to blow at the candles, and I'm an idiot, and I did it. and then they gave me like a stool or something. I'm like, oh, cool, I'll sell this. Like there are so many amazing, charming, as tired as that word is, facets to Animal Crossing New Leaf. But Jeff, you're absolutely right. Like it took me 2 months to come to that realization that I've maxed myself out on it. Like I could see the treadmill in front of me where I'm like, okay, catch bugs, sell bugs, buy house crap, fortune cookies. Every day I gotta wake up and get my fortune cookies. Should I have this fortune cookie? Okay, I just get a different fortune cookie. Like it just became so monotonous that the joy and like the little Nintendo nostalgia that's paired so tightly with Animal Crossing eventually just wore out its welcome.
Yeah, and I hate to say this because I don't really ever wish this kind of business model on Nintendo, but Animal Crossing is the kind of game that might work really well if it had like an MMO approach, because I think what needs to happen for Animal Crossing to stay relevant over a long period of time is that you need somebody to be creating content for it after the game is made.
Yeah. Well, and I think that was done, but not big enough, like with the QR code scanning crap that you could put in your world and visiting other people's little towns and Reggie's fucking Reggie blanket. Like all those things were just so weird and awesome, but it wasn't exposed enough and there wasn't enough of it.
Yeah. And I don't really want, again, I don't really want Nintendo to be making, in the business of making subscription-based MMOs, but if there is a way to deliver actual, like, new content, because here's the thing, when they make the cartridge, all this shit is planned far in advance, and it's all on the cartridge, usually. That's, like, kind of the Nintendo approach. It's on the cartridge, they send you a little bit of data over Wi-Fi that just unlocks it. Mm-hmm. But what really needs to be happening is they need someone who's making new shit after the game has been completed, and like coming up with interesting ideas to keep you coming back. And that's the only way that they're really going to give Animal Crossing the kind of legs that I think everyone wants it to have. But of course, then you've got the MMO model, which is very different than what, you know, just paying $40 once. So it's, you know, there'd be a big trade-off there. But I think if they wanted to test the waters with MMOs, Animal Crossing would probably be a good place to do it, because it would offer something that I really don't think you would see anywhere else. And, you know, that's just, it's always been kind of an offline MMO. Mm-hmm. So just kind of taking it that final step, I think, could pay off for them. But then again, you know, it you run the risk of starting to feel nickel and dimed. So it'd be a very delicate balancing act for them. But I think that would kind of, that would bring the franchise into really new and interesting waters if they did it. But I don't know if it would be good in the long run. But I don't know. That's just my 2 cents.
What? Go ahead, Jamie.
Go on.
Nope.
No. I'm done. I was moving on.
I'm done. I'm moving on too.
Yeah, we can move on. Sorry, go ahead, Jamie.
I was gonna say, so now that we've talked about Animal Crossing, I was gonna say, think about Pokemon XY and think about Ni No Kuni. Uh-huh. And think about like how Ni No Kuni is like interesting. Mm-hmm. And think about how Pokemon is boring.
No, but you're wrong, because Pokemon's interesting and Ni No Kuni is boring.
No, that's wrong. But
well, the Ni No Kuni is interesting in a short burst, but then it loses all of its allure. Like I would probably never go through and like catch all the familiars in Ni No Kuni and try to figure out strategies for all of them.
Right, but I also think that's okay. I think a lot of that is your adoration for Pokemon, though, saying that your familiarity with Pokemon.
I mean, I like the art for sure, but it's for me, I think Pokemon has very interesting mechanics. I love team building in Pokemon.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I just have always, I legitimately love that franchise mechanically. I like what each new edition brings mechanically to the series. I'm not your average consumer, but I'm very focused on that kind of stuff. And I really enjoy like team building and strategizing, and I'm very invested in like what happens in the metagame. So for me, that part of Pokemon has always been very alluring to me.
But it sounds so excruciating. It's like the StarCraft of the DS. It's like it's like people, you know, make machines so that they can like autonomously breed the best Pokemon, and it gets down to where you're just playing with a spreadsheet.
Mm-hmm.
It's that type of game.
Well, Jeff is like, yes, and?
No. Look, on the one hand, Jamie, you are right. It definitely has its spreadsheet elements, which I think I think if there was anything that they could excise, I think that would be the best thing to get rid of, the spreadsheet parts. But I think there is another element to Pokemon, and that is the fact that there are so many different kinds of moves. One of the best things that ever happened in Pokemon, and this is something that maybe a lot of people doesn't really register for most people, is giving abilities to Pokemon. You know how every Pokemon, like when you catch it, like your starter has the ability that powers up, you know, like water moves when it's weak or whatever.
Yeah.
So that, like, that one's pretty boring. But like there's other really interesting abilities, like one that reverses stat boosts. That's called Contrary. So like if you use like a really powerful move that would ordinarily punish you by lowering your attack after you use it, it actually raises your attack. There are Pokemon that when you bring them out, they change the weather on the field so that
you can use
moves that would take one turn or two turns to use now take one turn.
Right. I think, Jeff, that we need to table the Pokemon Y discussion at least for the moment, because I think that you and I at the very least believe this is a top 5 game of the year. Jamie, maybe you don't, but I think that we'll have different arguments we'll give it its due here in a moment. I think that there's maybe some other things we can tackle that aren't going to be quite as heady.
Sure.
Yeah. And I think I'm getting a little too techie and whatever. I think if we're gonna make the case for Pokemon, it has to be on different grounds than just purely the mechanics. So
how about
let's talk about Antichamber.
Let's.
A great game.
Yeah.
Really interesting.
Yeah.
But I don't think it should be in top 5 for the following reasons. And this is, so I'm kind of skipping over my adoration for the game, and trust me, I adore it. But
hit me with it. Yeah.
I'm going to go straight to why it should be in the top 10, but not necessarily in top 5. It's not a brand new idea, and it's not even taking an established idea and doing something terribly brand new with it. Mm-hmm. I think it's just it's like improving on the whole portal subgenre of games. Mm-hmm. And it's doing so in a fabulous way, but it is kind of short, and for me it kind of wore out its holy crap moments in like an hour. Mm-hmm. And after that, it was still fun and interesting, but it kind of stopped being mind-blowing, and then it started being either just frustrating or, oh, it's that again, kind of thing.
I think as soon as the gun mechanic was introduced into that game, it suddenly kind of dropped in my eyes. The mechanics it was first introducing, like, hey, you have these abilities all along, you just didn't know you could do this or manipulate this environment this way, or like, if you look at this, it's red, now it's green, oh my god, like those are so cool. But then you get this gun essentially that it's like, you know, back to Doom sort of things, that it's like, oh, you have this gun unlocks certain things because it has the power to manipulate the world in this very specific way, that we have very slight plays on that manipulation, and then we stack that on top of itself two more times.
Yeah, well, I will say this. I will say that the gun maybe was not the strongest part of the game, although it did lead to some really interesting mechanics. Unfortunately, I don't recall exactly how this worked, but I remember that you had to use the gun for some reason to do you remember the room where, like, there would be like safe zones? It was a corridor, and there were safe zones, and then there were like zones that would kill you. And somehow or another, you had to use the gun to traverse this room.
I didn't know you could die in that game.
Okay. I'm just not even going to bother making the point there. Again, for me, it was definitely just blowing my mind all the time. The thing that I liked about that game is that, I guess what it was doing was obviously just not that hard to program, you know, like dumping you in a room when you walk in another room. And, you know, obviously that's, you can just program, you know, move object or whatever. But for me, everything that like they were presenting me with that was weird was so plausible to me. And so it just made me feel like I was in a different world. And I'm very personally attached to the game. I don't know exactly why, but I just was having, you know, a really mind-bending experience the whole time. And I will definitely agree that the gun was not the strongest part of the game. I think that the coolest parts were just traversing, not really, you know, having to use a gun. I think that invited too many comparisons to Portal. But for me, I mean, there's no way that it's not in my personal top five, but if I'm going to be overruled, then, you know, we cut it. But, you know, for me, it's still definitely in my personal top five. You know, I think I'd give it number three just because I felt like it did break new ground. And again, you know, it definitely invites comparisons to Portal, but it felt distinct to me, and it did feel new. And I guess even if other games have played with your conception, your idea of, like, you know, what is forward and what is backwards, or, you know, what, it, you know, opening the door doesn't actually open the door, whatever. It felt unique to me. And I you know, that's why it's so high up for me. But, you know, I recognize that I seem to be in a minority on that. So.
No, you did. I think it's a fantastic game. I thought you just did it justice just now.
Okay, that's fair. Everyone should play it because it's not on lists.
So, okay. Where should we go now?
All right. Well,
don't you dare.
What's that?
No, you can't do that.
What are you saying about?
Won't let you do that, Fox.
I'm not clicking anywhere in specific. Don't pay attention to that. I don't know.
It's
I
so
mean,
hard.
Yeah. At this point now, Jeff, I think we this is first blood here into your top five that you really don't want to see going with Antechamber being removed from the list.
Yes.
Should I write mine here so that you guys can know ahead of time?
No, I think you need to say it right now. You need to just say your top five, or what do you mean?
My top five, so that you know when, because you guys have your lists down, but I don't have my list down.
Well, sure, if you want to go ahead. Otherwise, I think we can just keep blazing ahead since we're down to eight now. So
all right, let's blaze.
All right,
420, blaze it. I'm gonna put BioShock Infinite under the microscope.
Okay.
Fighting words.
Yeah.
I think
that it's in my top five. But go on, Jeff. Say preach.
I mean, you guys know what I didn't like about that game. Yeah. I feel like it was a step back from BioShock. I feel like the actual act of playing the game was not very fun to me. It was incredibly like shooting gallery, you know, wave based, you know, kind of COD shooter. I mean, it's like they took all these weird steps back. Like, they gave you the weird recovering health and shield, and like they only let you hold two weapons, and all the enemies were lame. Like, the handyman was stupid. Like, I mean, I don't know
what you're talking about.
You thought, okay, compare the handyman to the Big Daddy. How can you even put them on the same level?
The Big Daddy had a fantastic menace because it was this creature, like this nemesis in this world that was, you know, not that wouldn't initially attack you. But I think there was nothing enjoyable about fighting a Big Daddy. Like, that was the worst part about the Big Daddy in the original BioShock. The fighting a handyman at least was a little bit interesting because you had an objective, it had an attack pattern, and it wasn't just fly at you fucking fast and then you die immediately.
Well, here's what I would say. The Big Daddy may have not been that fun to fight, and I guess maybe I won't argue that either game had amazing combat mechanics, but mm-mm. at least the Big Daddy like had character. The handyman was just, okay, there's the big guy. Like, I don't really understand what was the handyman's...
There was a story. There were several audio logs.
About the handyman?
Yeah.
I believe so.
There were, yep.
I don't know. It just didn't have the same character. It felt... The combat arenas felt so lifeless to me. I just felt like shit was being thrown... Yeah, go ahead.
BioShock Infinite is in my top five, and the combat is like not a reason why it's there at all. Like,
okay.
I'll agree with you that I didn't dislike the combat as much as you did, but I didn't. I mean, if it were just the combat, that game wouldn't be in my top 10 or 15.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that game is there for completely other reasons.
Okay.
Like, there were so many moments that no other game will ever give me, like walking down that first avenue in the beginning of the game and having that golden sunlight pour down the avenue, like illuminating every cobblestone and like There's little moments like that throughout the game, like wandering into the musician's apartment, like above, like a crack in time and space, and like wandering over to his piano and like discovering something about him. And
right, or just the start of that game, going up into the lighthouse, ringing the bells, and having that ominous horn play.
Yeah, or the very end of the game where you see all the lighthouses. Yeah,
I think the strongest parts were the beginning and the end. I agree with you there.
And I think that they're so strong and so memorable that it's definitely in my top five.
Yep. I just think that everything between the beginning and the end wasn't very good.
It's weak, for sure. For sure, weak when compared to the other parts.
Yeah, I guess the thing is I have so many problems that it's hard for me. Like, I like the game. Like, I didn't have a bad time playing it, but there's just so many things that really irked me. Like, it felt so utterly ultra-violent. And just it was so gratuitous. And I know that, you know, BioShock has always been a very violent world, but it was just like it went from this like peaceful environment to almost every moment of the game, just everything was trying to kill you. And I know there were a couple exceptions. You know, there is some downtime in the game, and there are just some places where there is no one. But it was so shooting gallery, and things just at the drop of a hat, just everyone was out to kill you, and all the people in town just vanish. Like, you'd be in a place where like it was peaceful, and then like you would start a fight, and then everyone who was in there is just gone.
Well, I agree with you. I think that is a flaw with general video game design. Like, video game design as a whole suffers from that same thing. But I think that if you are a crazy person, you can probably make a case for that, and especially when you're trying to like justify it within the world of BioShock, like you know, how the people behave in that world. I mean, there is a case to be made there. It exists. I can see it, but I think it's a waste of time to articulate it.
Yeah, I think that's that right.
When it was doing what BioShock does well, it did it like superbly, and it gave me exactly what I wanted. Like going into the museum, for example, that was like a fantastic little segment of that game for me. It really reminded me of BioShock 1, and it was like that. It was that typical like Ken Levine storytelling. And sure, things have happened. Games have happened since BioShock 1 that surpass it in so many arenas, from the combat to like the mode of storytelling, but somehow, for some reason, this game still stirred in me like the same emotions that BioShock 1 did. And I don't think it can be a purely nostalgic kind of thing, because the setting is completely different. So this game was doing something right. And it might be hard to like put your finger on it. But
remember also that the parts you like most, the beginning, have a lighthouse in them, and the part in the end has a rapture in it. So that kind of makes the nostalgia case a little bit. I'm being a little flippant here.
No, I understand. It's the ending part though is not the return to rapture. I mean, I think that's super cool and a really awesome little bit. But it's them taking out their shotgun, pulling the franchise behind the house, and shooting it in the face, saying, "We have told our story for BioShock. We can keep going." But it doesn't fucking matter. Like, you can play with this dead corpse.
It's a definite mindfuck. Yeah.
But like, I think that's that sort of behavior in a game design needs to be rewarded, needs to be acknowledged. Yeah. And Jeff, I know that you didn't love the gameplay with the shooting mechanic and the kind of the world traversal. Like, the skyhooks, I'm sure, weren't big for you.
I like the concept. I wish they had used it. I wish that the environments had been a little bit more open. They sometimes felt too much like corridors in the way that The Last of Us did not.
Right. Well, I think that BioShock, the original BioShock, is 100% corridors. This may have made them wider and allowed for backtracking, but I think that, you know, it is the natural step forward.
I guess so, yeah.
I kind of realized what they wanted me to view the combat areas as about halfway through the game, which is just kind of a playground. Once I stopped thinking about the game in a serious,
narrative dissonance.
And then I just realized that, okay, I'm going to get some really solid story, and then I'm going to be in a playground. And what they want me to do is they want me to shoot some guys and then jump on this roller coaster and then jump off the roller coaster and shoot some guys. Like, once I realized that, I felt like the combat really became fun and not like kind of an interruption to the story and exploration. Mm-hmm. But yeah, for the first half of the game, I was kind of struggling against that. But then it became fun, and wow, the ending of that game is so good. Like just the scenes. And,
what about when you go through the rift and you come out and they're like, oh, suddenly the people who've been enslaved the entire time are murdering everyone. And then Booker's like, oh, guess the only difference between Daisy and the other one is how you spell their names. That yeah. really rubbed me the wrong way. In a
yeah,
big way.
It seemed ill thought, maybe lazy at worst. I mean, but do I think it was game breaking? No, I think it was kind of disruptive in the overall storytelling. Yes and no, because if you're saying this is a multiverse, then you're kind of like. Saying,
I guess
well,
I just I mean look you could say that,
but they had a point to say the game design worked around that, like it's like fighting yeah. will be fighting, you know, power, you know, or absolute power corrupts absolutely, like the, yeah. And the game that they've designed wraps around that mentality. It's not like suddenly you're gonna walk through this rift and now it's a point and click adventure, though that would be fucking amazing. I mean it mm-hmm. you can't, they did not make that decision. Yeah. And I think that decision that they did make, though, you know, a bummer and kind of obvious in its flaws, mm-hmm. it doesn't detract from the high points that the game did do.
I guess
you have
for
to
me,
let go.
I guess for me, what ultimately makes it not in my top five of the year, and not even really in my top 10, is just that I understand that a lot of these choices were made, I guess, in the service of some grand vision. I guess. The consequences of those choices for me were very negative, though. Like, most of the game is the combat, is kind of this traversal of the world, which is, you know, painfully linear and very disjointed, too. I mean, you just kind of get thrown around from set piece to set piece with no real understanding of, like, the basic geometry of, like, Columbia, like, how you get from one place to another. And also just, I liked some of the story beats a lot. Like, I really liked the multiverse idea. But I just had a big problem with kind of the racial elements of it, you know, just talking about, like I said, equating, you know, these slaves to their masters, you know, saying that they would behave exactly the same way. It really offended me, and it hurt my enjoyment of the game. And I was already kind of feeling the pain of the slog, even though, like, there's probably a reason for the slog. As you said, they wanted to drop you in a playground. It just wasn't a playground I wanted to be in, and it comprised, like, most of the game, so... For me, it's not, but it sounds like I'm kind of fighting a losing battle against you guys, so I guess I just have to let it
My
slide.
One question, Jeff, is you did finish the game, right?
Oh, yeah.
So no matter what, even if you were really soured on the combat and some of the design choices, there was still enough there motivating you to see it through to the end?
I mean,
there
I'll
was still that intrigue?
I mean, I'll never play it again, but yeah, I slogged through to the end.
Okay.
I think nothing that you said just now or throughout this conversation, Jeff, I disagree with. But yeah. There's something there. It's almost like Ken Levine has tapped into like something eternal about games. I don't want to wax too.
Yeah, I don't think I'm ever gonna be. But go ahead, keep on.
Okay.
I was just gonna say, like, it's like for me, BioShock was such a pillar of games. And it's almost as if Ken Levine didn't even play any games or read anything from when that was released and until now. Mm. And if you had told me that's how this game was going to be like, I would have said, I'm not going to enjoy that game. But somehow I love it even more for just completely ignoring everything that's happened in games since BioShock 1 was released.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's, If I get another game like this in 4 years, sure, we'll have this conversation again, and like a lot of the story will be so heavy-handed it's painful, and the combat will be, you know, terrible, but I'll still like put it in my top five, and I really can't explain why.
Yeah, I'm kind of done with it, and if this is how the next BioShock is, it's not really something I want, because
there is no next BioShock.
Yeah, I mean, fine. I mean,
System Shock 3.
If this is what his next project is like, it's probably not what I want, because it just, while I did enjoy the beginning and to some extent the end as well, it just the most of the game wasn't that fun for me. So it's just not enough for me.
Right. And I think, Jamie, you and I had similar sentiments towards it. The way I viewed BioShock Infinite was it is the last great first-person adventure shooter. Like, I know it's kind of a weird way to put a, like, to kind of Japanese-style pigeonhole it into a genre, but I think that BioShock has influenced so many games since its first game that it's kind of created this genre of first-person shooter exploration. And I think that BioShock Infinite has put the cap on that. Like, storytelling in a first-person game with the, like, it's what we know it as now is done. Like, the audio log is over. The weird
yes.
Like the weird world, like lived in world in a first person gun holding refrigerator sized person, like, it's done. There is nowhere to go from here as game design currently is, because BioShock is kind of like the last dinosaur.
I agree. I completely agree. In that way, I kind of see it as similar to Rayman, because it's like, you can't do this again. If you do it again, I'm just going to get mad. But like, but I'm glad you did it this time, and I'm glad that, like, you stuck to it, and like it turned out the way it did, and it does that thing where I will just be doing something else in my life, and then I'll think about a moment from that game, and I'll be like, this is great. I want to go back and play this one moment from this game. So I see, okay, we're sedimenting it in the top five. I like it.
The discussion that we just have shows that I don't think we can let this go from top five.
Yeah, we can't let it
but
go.
But we can undo
top.
We can
not,
undo
it's
text.
Not even in my top 10.
You know, if we want to kill it, we can kill it, but
yeah. we'll have to, you know, maybe we'll come back to it, maybe
yeah.
we won't.
It's not
but
a
it
cut
like,
right now. We have yeah. other we got other things to go to.
I yeah. think that
such
love...
as
okay,
Ni No Kuni.
Okay, I agree with you. That's what I was about to say.
Ni No Kuni is not one of the best five games this year.
No. Great game, but there were so many opportunities where it could have like just decided to not be shrouded in the traditions of the JRPG and make the game so much more enjoyable. Mm-hmm. It really makes some player hostile decisions, in my opinion, like
yes.
in terms of how much time you have to spend doing certain things. And
right.
If you want the little extra quests, like how much backtracking you'll have to do to get it. And I really hate when games kind of artificially inflate their hours like that. That
yeah.
said, it's a beautiful game.
And it's so JRPG.
I will tell you the one thing I think Ni No Kuni could do to put it in the top five, and that is have a good story. That is all it had to do.
I don't think the story is bad. I think the story is, I mean, if you like, how many Studio Ghibli movies have you
right.
seen?
The
Jeff?
Story is Miyazaki.
I've seen a lot.
Have you seen the one with Kristen Wiig?
You have to tell me what it's called.
Oh man.
Is it Ponyo? That's the last one I've seen.
Yeah, Ponyo.
Ponyo? No, I have not.
Have you seen Ponyo?
It's like Pinocchio, right?
I love
Little Mermaid, Fish Pinocchio.
I love Miyazaki, but to me, Ni No Kuni feels like a game that looks and sounds like a Miyazaki movie,
mm-hmm.
but the story is kind of just lifeless. I mean, like it's got some heart. It's got some nice animation. The characters have some personality. But it is like the flattest story of all time.
Well, the thing is, I feel like it's almost like a Japanese kind of way of storytelling that I enjoy. Mm-hmm. And if you watch Ponyo, then maybe you'll get a better sense of
maybe.
It.
It's very
Ponyo
simple.
Very,
like
it's
a very,
very simple.
Classic story, like a hero's journey, very obvious things that are going to happen. But it's delivered mm-hmm. so delightfully.
And it like it
yeah.
you might even be called boring, but it's
yeah.
there's it's so it's almost relaxing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like
well, I haven't seen Ponyo. I mean, I have seen other Miyazaki, and to me it just feels like it lacks the soul that Miyazaki movies have, and that's something that's very intangible, of course. And yes, they're very simple movies. I agree, but they've always got a little something.
I think that if you're saying that the game has not hooked you to a point where you want to see its conclusion. And if that's why you're saying the story is flat, I don't agree with you, but I think there are enough barriers in the way to really kind of enjoy that simplicity of story that it's willing to give you. I think that, well, there's other flaws in that in Ni No Kuni that prevent it from being number one, that hinder its storytelling.
Well, I will say this. It is a game that I definitely intend to finish. I've actually just kind of started playing it because Griffin had it on number one on his list, and I'd bought it last year, and I hadn't really gotten too far. And I'm having a great time with the game, and it's a fabulous game, and I will definitely finish it, no doubt. And I might even put it on a list, you know, if I were making a new list. But I just, the story is really, I hate to say it, it's just nothing special. And it really feels like somebody was like, looked at the formula of a Ghibli movie and was like, oh, I can do that. But it just doesn't have the soul. And I'll defend this to the death. It just doesn't have soul. And it goes through all the motions. It's got the wonderful puns. It's very whimsical, but it feels a little contrived. And it's just, like I said, it just doesn't have that soul. But I still will definitely finish the game. And
I tell you this? At the end of the game, you don't fight God.
I enjoy fighting God.
Is
sometimes.
Your mind blown? Is it not the best JRPG ever?
If there's a good, if the story and the characters are fun, I will happily fight God.
It is. I don't want to say anything about the, well, I mean, we may have an ending discussion about this at some point, but I think that if you go along with the journey and if you do give into it, like, it is really, really delightful. And ending makes good on what it promised initially. Ni No Kuni has some of the best parts of Pokemon, like the collecting, the raising, the training, the growing, the familiarity with your friends, like the leveling up. It has some of the best parts of classic JRPG design, of like item crafting, material hunting, leveling up. It has the greatest menu of all times, where you're going into this freaking book that you zoom in on pages and zoom out on. It's so good. It's such a good menu design.
Look, I totally agree. I don't take this to mean that I don't like the game, because I really love the game. I just think that it feels like it's going through the motions on the story, and I don't think there's any way I could feel differently. And it's when I enjoy a JRPG, when I really connect with a JRPG on a deep level, it's because I really identify with the characters, or something in the story is just really, really compelling on some level. Like, I compare it to FF9, which I don't think you like, Griffin, but I think you like Jamie.
Oh, yeah.
And the characters in FF9 are just so much more interesting and fun. And they're the same kind of whimsical characters, but they've got a lot more depth and just
I think
cool stuff going on.
Ni No Kuni has, it's, there are two huge glaring blemishes on this game. One, the characters. Two, the combat design, like the game design over like the interaction with the world, that the minute by minute gameplay. And those are two pretty damning things to say about a video game. The characters are fine. Like, they are anime stereotypes. They're not interesting beyond what they already are designed to be. They don't have enough interactions with each other. They make obvious choices.
Nothing is bad. They're just not great.
They're not interesting. I mean, there's nothing interesting about them. There's nothing novel about them. The only thing that I enjoy about the characters is, their real world components juxtaposed to their fantasy world components, which I think is a cute little fun gimmick. And the other thing that I really like about the characters are Oliver's. It's really nice. It's really interesting in a JRPG to have a main character who's not brooding, who's not angsty, who's not a little bitch. Like, he is a gung-ho little man who is ready to take on the world, and he's had shit happen to him, but he's a little precocious, like, 12-year-old boy that just is wanting to go on an adventure and forget about his problems, basically, and solve all that. It's very psychological. Like, it's very interesting. And the other flaw is the gameplay design. Like, the action RPG mechanics are extremely poorly thought out. Like, the ability, the micromanagement that's required to succeed in battle, you were never afforded the opportunity to have that. The AI design is not robust enough to let you let the characters play it on their own, and then the ability to control the battle scene does not exist because of how the combat system is created.
Yeah, I think my only contention was just that it might actually be a top five or even a top one game if the characters were a little more interesting, or if the story, you know, remained incredibly simple and you know, very archetypical, but had a little more energy or a little more vivacity or whatever. My main thing was just those would, if those items were present, then it would overcome some of the player hostile decisions that Jamie cited.
Right. And I know that one of the worst things you can say, well, one of the things that I dislike saying about a game is if you just give it time, it gets better. Like, you need to accept the flaws with it, because a flaw is a flaw. Like, it's the piece of shit in the living room analogy. Like, If there's a problem with it, the problem should be addressed. So if I say if you give it time, the story opens up and becomes more interesting. I know, Jeff, you just got the boat, right?
Yeah.
So you're like a third of the way through it, and
yeah,
I mean that means something with JRPGs, but it also is a flaw with JRPGs. And I think the story does improve and pick up and become a lot more interesting as time goes on. It very much is the hero's journey story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'll update that once I win. Yeah, and maybe it will. So we'll see how my opinions change. Yeah.
But, like, there's literally a Triforce moment in that game.
I'm excited.
So it's off the list.
Yes. Jamie, are you still with us?
Yeah.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure I hadn't killed you with talking.
One, no. 2, 3, 4.
You're making
five,
great points.
6. Okay. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Wait.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
So we have to cut one more game.
Really? Is this when we go back to Pokemon?
Mm.
Or do we go to something else?
I don't think that Pokemon. I mean, like, I haven't even played Zelda, but I think that's. But I think that Zelda is a top five game, just from like watching it and hearing what everyone has said about it. To me personally, The Last of Us, Brothers, Gone Home, and Super Mario 3D World. Actually, that 1, 2, 3, 4.
All right, I just locked in The Last of Us because I don't think there'll be any discussion about whether or not that's top five material.
Griffin, are we locking in Zelda?
I'll be happy to. I know, Jamie, you say you haven't played it, but you'll defer to our opinions on it, and
I'll defer to your opinions. I personally think that Brothers and Gone Home would be in my top five, but now we have to.
One of these four games needs to be cut. Pokemon X, Pokemon Y, which, I mean, it's technically two games. So we cut both of those.
They take the last two spots.
Brothers,
Jamie,
home.
Should we band together to protect Super Mario World?
Super Mario World 3D. Super Mario. 3D.
I was going to ask if we should, because we have so much to protect, Jeff.
Mm,
we have to protect.
We do.
There's yeah.
No, dude,
I'm taking something from you guys.
For the record, Brothers and Gone Home were both higher up on my list than Pokemon. But however, that does not mean that I would remove them over removing Pokemon.
Is it okay if I lock in Super Mario Brothers 3D World?
Yes, definitely.
Do you think that is one of the top five games of this year over the other three games listed on that or there?
I don't.
Ooh, interesting. I didn't realize we had three games left.
So over, is Super Mario 3D World a better game than Gone Home, Brothers, and Pokemon XY?
Okay.
Talk, Jamie.
It's so hard. Why do we have to do this? I think that...
If you don't do it, who will?
Tell me why it's not top five material. Play devil's advocate against it.
It is not better than Galaxy 2. It is just not. Galaxy 2 was wondrous. There were so many moments in that game where I was just... My jaw was to the floor. Mm-hmm. And I'd never seen anything like it. This takes 3D Land from the from the 3DS, and it takes Galaxy 2, and it makes a really great game out of the two of them, but it at no point was I ejaculating with with fervor. It was like
I think you might be right, Jamie.
Holy crap.
Shit. Well, here's the thing.
Think about playing Brothers, Jeff, and then think about playing Gone Home, and then think about playing Super Mario 3D World. When I played Brothers and Gone Home, I was literally happy to be a video game fan. I was like excited, and it made me look forward to the future. When I played Super Mario 3D World, I had a fantastic time. I was also kind of thinking to myself, I've done this before. And I didn't think that when I was playing Galaxy 2.
That's true. I mean, here's the thing about 3D World. Okay, so I agree with you, Jamie, that it doesn't make your jaw drop to the floor like Galaxy 2 does. There's just no two ways around that. The thing that it does, it is probably the most successful. It is like the culmination of Nintendo's vision of making a 3D Mario that can be played by people who played 2D Mario. And I think the biggest like expression of that is that I played Mario 3D World entirely with the D-pad. And it was perfect. It is a game that is honestly, it's almost designed for a D-pad. And I think that is so commendable. I think it is a staggering accomplishment. But I do agree, Jamie, that it is just not. It's not as good as Galaxy 2, even though the control is better and like they realize something that is more commendable. It's not as inventive as Galaxy 2, and that's hard for me to say because it is personally one of my top five games of the year. But if we're making a list that has something to offer for everyone, I'm not sure if we can spare it or not.
This is not a list that we are trying to you know make a smorgasbord of games. This is what you think are the best games this year.
We have to cut it because when I think about Super Mario 3D World, I think. Fantastic game, but 10 years from now, I'm going to look back at Super Mario 3D World, and I'm going to think that was the game that was almost as good as Galaxy 2.
Okay.
I personally will look back on it and think that was the game, you know, I'll think what I just said, which is that's the game that finally is like the perfect hybrid of 2D and 3D Mario. It is what 3D Land should have been. It'll feel different than Galaxy 2, but it will not be the one that I consider, I guess, the most inventive and the best made Mario ever. I don't know. It might be the best made, but it might not be the most creative Mario ever.
It's almost That's the unfair. Hardest part. It's almost unfair that we have to compare it to Galaxy 2, because if we weren't, then it would be like this incredible achievement. But coming off the heels of Galaxy 2, I feel like, I mean... In my personal list, this would be in the top five. Mm-hmm. But I think in the situation we find ourselves,
I hear you, Jamie.
This I know you guys are the only two that have played it. Obviously, I haven't. But this is my two cents on the situation. I didn't like Mario Galaxy, and I especially didn't like Mario Galaxy 2.
Yeah, it just
had a Wii. This is the number one game compelling me to go get a Wii and play it. Like, it seems like the most exciting. It seems like the most Mario of the new Super Mario bullshit that Nintendo's been crapping out. There is something that is, like, endearingly, delightfully old-school Mario about this game. And that's what really appeals to me about it. But it also has this kind of, like, new... Mario charm like when I played Sticker Star, like there's just so many cool neato things about Mario that have been done that aren't like, oh, waggle the controller like a controller waggler. Like there are game design decisions that I really, really enjoy that from what I've watched come through about Mario 3D World.
The thing is, if I were like teaching someone about platformers, I would assign both 3D World and Galaxy 2, because I think they both accomplish something different. Mm-hmm. But I think in terms of like the thing that is maybe the most, it's so hard for me because 3D World does something really special with like I said, you can play with a D-pad and it's sublime. But then Galaxy 2 just has things that you will never, like, some of the most creative design I've ever seen and some of the most interesting ideas just ever in a platformer.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Bee suit or cat suit?
Cat suit.
Cat
but the,
suit.
Bee,
yes.
The bee suit was probably the worst suit in Galaxy by far.
Worst suit ever.
Yeah, I don't know, but it's the worst suit in Galaxy. There are way better suits in Galaxy. It's just so hard because I think I'm removing it as
yeah,
much as I don't
Jesus.
Want to.
Okay. Wow.
It's very hard.
That was the one of those three games there that I on that line that I was pushing for.
I'm telling you, you guys are making me cut the games that I like the most.
I don't think you should cut Super Mario 3D World, but if you are saying that you can argue for the other two games more than that, then I mean...
Well, we still have to cut one more, don't we?
Yeah.
Or is it two more?
Well, two more.
Fuck. Yeah, so we're cutting 3D World.
Jesus.
Yeah, cut it.
I know, it's hard.
This is brutal. Jeff, make the cut.
I feel like our top 10 was more in like indicative, but the top 5 will be like the bloodied ones at the top of the mountain.
Yeah, yeah. It's hard to explain exactly why 3D World has to go, and I
it is hard to explain because it is a unspeakably fun, beautifully designed game. But I think I have less of a personal attachment to it than to Gone Home or to Brothers.
You know what's great though? We have three games that we've decided will be in our top 5. There are three other games that need to go or that are on the chopping block. And I think that the obvious choice is Brothers.
I do not.
I think Brothers is the weakest of the three games.
Let's talk.
I think Jeff's gonna agree with you, but only because he loves Pokemon.
Jeff, you want to work out the secret Pokemon deal with me,
Jamie? Let's talk about Brothers versus Gone Home for a second, Jamie. Let's rank those two just for a second. No, we can't do that.
If I was gonna rank those two, I would put Gone Home above Brothers. But oh God, would I?
I think Gone Home is a better game than Brothers.
You're asking
Jamie,
me to,
you're
like,
right. Let's cut Brothers.
I can't decide. I'm not sure. I actually put Brothers above Gone Home on my list, which was kind of a surprise for me.
I think that I love the 90s, so Gone Home takes it over Brothers. But Brothers does so many things amazingly right. Although, I will say this. Brothers, I have not played a game in a long time that had a game-halting, unexplicable and inexcusable glitch. Brothers had two that completely, like, the whole point of Brothers is that you get in the game and it just flows from beginning to end, and you're on this fantastic journey, this little journey, and unfortunately Brothers grinded to a halt twice for me in extremely infuriating ways. The first time was when I was supposed to steal the key from the troll, one of the best moments in the game. One of the best moments in the game, completely ruined because I would sneak up to the troll and
that,
I could
that
not.
That was the best
grab...
moment in the game.
It
was a good
I
moment. I liked it a lot too. Go on.
I snuck up and I was. I guess I'm thinking of that whole kind of sequence as one, you know, thing. But I snuck up. I couldn't grab it, and it didn't matter what I did. I didn't matter where I moved. I couldn't grab it. I went online. It was a known glitch. The only way to get around it is to completely restart the chapter. And that's, you know, 20 minutes, 25 minutes that I had to redo.
Yeah, riding and those chains sucked.
Yeah, like, it was annoying.
Mm. I'm going to... I honestly... This is so hard for me, because I thought about it for a long time.
Jeff, I feel so bad, because your list is the one that's getting so
crapped
mauled
on
here.
I know. Here's the thing. I went into this like list making process thinking like, okay, obviously Gone Home is better. But then I started like really thinking about it. And Gone Home does something like really special, and it really excels in one thing. Mm-hmm. Well, more than one thing. It's possible though that even though Brothers is not as good at that thing, it might be a better package for me. Maybe. But even with that, I might still let it go because I don't know. Gone Home is maybe Gone Home is the more important of those two titles, even though I think Brothers might be the better of those two titles. It's hard for me to let it go, but I'm willing to let it go for that reason.
Okay.
But
I'm willing to let it go as well. Because I don't... Here's my bit. I don't think Gone Home is a great video game. I think that Brothers is a worse video game.
Hmm. I think the Brothers is... I don't know. I came out in a weird place after going through this list-making process, like I said. And we could spend a long time talking about why I put Brothers higher, but it's hard to explain.
Yeah, I think that Brothers is a fantastic game that I'll remember forever. And yeah. It would be in my top five.
I think Brothers has a very interesting game play design that was... That it's a very interesting mechanic that has been done before in video games, but has an interesting story that is integrally tied along with its mechanics. Mm-hmm. But I think it's obvious. I think it has an interesting world, but it's an interesting world that's very sporadic and very schizophrenic. Like it's very, like explosive, something new, nothing really cohesive between any of it. And like I said, I think it's an extremely obvious game, and I think it's very masturbatory. Like you're playing it and you're like, I'm the smartest one. I could use both my thumbs independently. Aren't I a great gamer? Like
I never had that experience.
Yeah, I solved this
puzzle I can see what I'm going to have to do with this puzzle, and I'm going to beat this challenge because I have to think differently.
I don't even remember any puzzles or challenges.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't really think that... The puzzles in Brothers were never hard.
Yeah.
Nor were they ever meant to be, I don't think.
I never thought... That game, to me, is... First of all, I disagree that the world is not cohesive. I think it's tremendously cohesive.
Yeah, you walked across the whole world.
I thought that it was, like, directed beautifully. Like, I thought that there were so many great... You know, shots. I love the benches, just sitting down on the benches.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, so caves, ice world, giant land, then weird snow town. It was like a Contra level.
Sounds awesome.
But there were the giants.
About the giants?
Giants were awesome. Okay, how cool was it to just saw off a giant's arm?
I loved it. I loved every minute
Ultimately,
of it.
The most
a giant in the face.
I think that was the most interesting part of the whole game right there was that giant manipulation sequence and what, like, if you want to talk about an interesting emotional moment, it's doing that bit with a giant, because I think that was the most effed up moment in the entire experience.
I mean, that game was full of effed up moments, like dudes hanging themselves in front of you, and then you save them, and they're like really upset that you save them, or you don't save them,
right?
Yeah.
But yeah,
Jeff, shouldn't we keep Brothers and get rid of Pokemon? As the biggest Pokemon fan here, don't you think that?
I cannot let that.
I think it's on the list, Jamie. I'm sorry.
No, I understand. Cut Brothers. Cut it.
God, you guys are just breaking my balls.
Cut Brothers.
You have no idea how much heart and soul went into my list.
Cut it.
We're down to our five.
Cut it.
Do we have to now argue among the five?
Well, here's the thing. We're down to five games. Let me get these properly highlighted to give them their fanfare here.
Can we play the FF7 fanfare right now? Can you edit that in?
No, there'll be no Final Fantasy VII anything.
I wish I had a sax.
The FF7's like...
Oh, yeah. That's true.
The five games of 2013, which we believe are the best games this year, are BioShock Infinite, The Last of Us, Pokemon X, Pokemon Y, Zelda, A Link Between Worlds, and Gone Home.
Yay!
Top five games. Now,
there's only one game on that list I really don't like, so I'm okay with that.
Okay, yeah. There's only one game on that list I don't really like.
There's one game on that list that I don't really like.
Perfect.
We all have one game we hate on that list. I feel like that is very fitting.
Excellent.
Yeah. How
beautiful.
Democratic.
And now I think it's obvious that the best game this year was The Last of Us.
Yep.
Yep.
So enjoy the journey, because there's no discussion after this point. The Last of Us was the best game of 2013. If you disagree, you're wrong and dumb.
Yeah.
Go watch professional
you, EGX,
wrestling
for giving GTA 5 the best game of the year, because you guys are awful.
Right.
I hate you.
Yeah.
Die in a fire.
if you want to spend 10 minutes to 20 minutes going through each one of these, maybe talking a little bit about why they belong here. Like, we haven't said a word about Zelda. I know we cut short Pokemon X and Y. Gone Home, I think we touched on briefly. BioShock Infinite has had its due. Will get its due in another category as well, or has gotten it, depending on how you're listening to this. and then, obviously, The Last of Us is the best game of 2013. It has done things that other video games of that caliber have never even imagined doing. It has a story. It tells it succinctly and beautifully. It does things like creating a world, creating interactions between well-designed characters who have emotions, who have designs, who aren't just papier-mâché cutouts of you know, tired tropes. It's mechanics, though not perfect, do play into the storytelling of the game. It has tense moments. It takes survival action games into a new realm by never giving you a break. It creates challenges of a diverse nature that change from moment to moment with the enemy types that are both easily recognizable and also immediately challenging and obvious when you see them. It toes this line of like stupid dichotomy that isn't even worth, or that you can't even say in a single sentence. So I'll pass it on to somebody else who wants to take over talking about The Last of Us.
I think that what it does best is it does, if I feel like it does everything that BioShock tried to do, but it does it with subtlety and grace.
Yeah.
And that's what this game really did that no game before it has done effectively. It used subtlety. It didn't hit you over the head with themes. It kind of let them stew a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I hope it laid out a path for games in general to be less heavy-handed with their narratives. And the other thing I'll say is that I was watching a bunch of other top 2013 lists, in particular Polygon's, and they loved this game, but they kept saying it wasn't fun. Everyone says that about this game. It wasn't really fun.
I had so much fun with it.
I had so much fun. I had so much fun with this game. I can't believe that people would say that. If it wasn't so much fun and so suspenseful, then maybe you just don't like survival horror.
Right.
And but this game's great.
I had the opposite reaction that so many people had, where they had this really touching, like, heartfelt, emotional moment at the end of it where they're like, I just wanted to hug my loved ones. Like, I didn't have that moment. Like, I was like, okay, I played this character story. It was fascinating. It was moving, but it's done, and this was great. Like, I was never turned off by the whole experience, but I think the story was done. The story was complete. The story was interesting. I think that it was fun. That competitiveness against the combat puzzle that I was engaging in made it enjoyable. And I didn't have that, like, I'm going to go and cry because I was so moved by the beginning or the end of this game.
I would say that the story beats were, like, intense and emotionally challenging. And I'm the kind of person, for whatever reason, I just never cry at any media. But this is the closest I would come, and it definitely moved me. It definitely made me feel at times hurt, at times, you know, happy, at times sad, whatever. I was totally on the emotional roller coaster they wanted me to be on. But at no point did I think, like, I don't want to play this game anymore. Like, I wanted to see this story through. It's an amazing story. And, you know, Jamie already said, you know, it's amazing in that they exercise so much restraint in delivering the story. They give you what you need, that they're not, there's no stupid bombastic set pieces. This is coming off the heels of Uncharted for this studio. And the things they change, I mean, obviously, you know, some of the core is similar, but the stuff they change, I mean, there's no ridiculous set pieces constantly breaking ledges or anything like that. It's not gamey in that way, and that it has a lot of contrivances to make you, you know, face enemies or whatever else, with a few exceptions. But it's also like when you are playing it, it is so much a game. So it's like it's that rare, perfect marriage of like incredible, unprecedented storytelling. And like a game that is mechanically interesting and fun and in many ways like classic, like you don't regenerate health. Like right. What game can you say in 2013? What game would you ever expect in 2013 to do that?
Yeah.
Except for The Last of Us.
Yeah.
And
instantly like, classic.
Yeah, and like the crafting system it's very modern in that you only have to, you know, throw a couple things together, but it's so perfect. And it's all like the mechanics and the storytelling just blend into each other right. So perfectly and just cross over back and forth. And it's just that rare, like just perfectly balanced game.
Right.
And there are of course a couple minor things, but it's just so superlative in every category, and that's such an accomplishment.
Mm-hmm. So, I don't think there's anything wrong with the game's kind of slow herky jerky start. Like you have that big moment at the beginning, which again, I think was obvious as to what was gonna be happening. But delivered interestingly, and then you had about, you know, two hours of kind of setup, which is fine because there's nothing wrong with that gameplay. There was nothing like unenjoyable about it, and it did a great job of kind of setting up your skills as a combatant in this world. It may have not been throwing you into the pits, giving you all the tools and kind of saying, okay, now here's The Last of Us, jump in there and craft some smoke bombs and shoot some, stab some guys in the back of the head, mushroom dudes in the back of the head with your plastic knife that sucks. Like, but it set you in a familiar world, and then it slowly took it away while it was giving you more things.
Yeah, and it's something that you touched on, Griffin. I mean, it was completely unafraid to just, you know, say, look, you know, you're not going to have combat for the next 40 minutes, let's say. And that was great. I mean, all the exploration portions of the game, I was never bored, not even for a moment. I mean, the game never felt like it dragged. I mean, the times when you weren't fighting were just as compelling, if maybe even not more so in some cases to me, as the times when you were. It just... Like I said, it's just that rare game that just balances everything so well. And you can just see the care that went into it.
Yeah. So. All right.
I love that game.
Yes, I love that game as well. Zelda, A Link Between Worlds, I think is the runner-up, if you want to put it at that. Since we haven't given any discussion to Zelda... I think it's one very much worth talking about, and I think it is one of the best games this year.
Yeah.
And I think we need to spend a few minutes discussing why it was so good and deserves to be in the top five.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to?
Can I say some things about it?
Absolutely.
As if I played it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So the ability to rent weapons completely changes the game and frees you up to take on this world that we have all played many times before in a completely new way. And also, it brings out like the best parts of what's the game, the original game that it
Link to the Past,
to? Late to the Party.
that's a NeoGAF joke right there.
It takes the best elements of that game and it completely reinterprets them, but it keeps so many small touches from it so that, as I've said before on this episode of Boss Barrel Radio, it tickles that nostalgia bone, but at the same time, it challenges you to think about this game in entirely new ways.
Yeah. And just from the moment.
Also, I just want to say one last thing.
Go ahead.
The dating sim aspect of this game was fabulous.
Yeah, forget about Love Plus.
If a game has dating sim in it, it's in my top whatever.
Jamie, just to kind of build on that whole idea of like familiar yet instantly different, I think you feel that difference from the moment that you start moving around in the world, because The old game was kind of, it was, I mean, you could move in a circle, I guess, if you wanted to, but essentially you were doing digital movement and you would kind of like sidestep and stuff. But when you pick up this game, first of all, it's running at 60 frames a second. So everything when you move is incredibly snappy and responsive, but you also have full analog control over your movement. And it introduces this kind of like weird precision to your movement, which just makes it feel like this entirely new game. Did you have this experience, Griffin?
Yeah, and I didn't like that. I mean, not to jump into that immediately, but to me, that was the most unappealing part of this game was it was...
For me, I didn't like it in the beginning, but once I got used to it, like in a couple minutes, I was like, this is incredible.
Well, it took me three dungeons and you know, 2 or 3 hours to kind of appreciate what it was going for. Because my nostalgia for Link to the Past, it wasn't so much about how the game played. It was more of just purely nostalgia. Like, this is what you do in Link to the Past. Like, you wake up, it's raining, you get your dumb sword, and then you go through these things and you chop these stupid lightning bolts and you fight this stupid spaghetti monster thing, and it sucks. And then you go to the Dark World and you're a bunny. Like, it's more of these, like mental set pieces that are more powerful to me than the actual gameplay decisions of
Link
Zelda
to the Past
games. Yeah,
I was gonna say I came into this not wanting nostalgia. I actually, when I first saw this game and I saw that they were setting it in the same world as Link to the Past, I was pretty upset. I was like, wow, like, you know, again with the, you know, mining the back catalog, and is this going to be any different? This looks like new Super Zelda Brothers or something. Mm-hmm. I was very skeptical of this game going in, and I think getting that instant feeling of difference from the moment I started was like, oh my God, thank you so much. Like, I'm so glad that this is not the same game. Mm. And I had these experiences like all the way through, and the game does this great job of like being like, hey, you played A Link to the Past, so you probably think you know what's going to happen here, but no, actually you don't. So like you'll go through. I think Griffin, and did you ever play A Link to the Past, Jamie?
No.
Okay. Well, in forgetting that, one great little moment in the game. In Link to the Past, you go through this dungeon in the Dark World, and you go in there and you save this girl, and she's like, "Oh my God, thank you, you saved me. Take me out of this dungeon." And then like, you go and you have to take her out of the dungeon, and like, she has all these rules. She's like, don't put me next to monsters, or like, don't let me go in the light. And then you get to the end of the dungeon and it turns out that she's actually the boss. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that's like the big reveal. And then you have to kill her.
Yep.
So then you're playing Link Between Worlds, and you go to the same place and you end up one way or another in the same basic idea of a dungeon. Although, we'll get to this later, the dungeons are really, really well designed. But you get into the same dungeon, you save the girl, and you're like, oh, like, are they really going to do this again? And then you go through the dungeon, and you're leading the girl out, and she's kind of being a nag like last time. And you get to the boss door, and it's like, that's the only way out. And then you go in the boss door, and you fight a completely different boss, and then you leave.
That's awesome.
Right. I think even, Jeff, what you're saying even before that, like that undercutting expectation is what Zelda A Link Between Worlds does best. Like, for me, it was literally when you go to the first dungeon, when you're playing that game, and you go to that same place in the east part of the map, and you do that crap, and then you leave it, and you're like, huh, well, didn't get the Pegasus boots. Or actually, you know, you leave it and you're like, well, I guess it's on to the next place that I go to that's down south. And I have to have this bow now, and that boss fight sucked. And now I got to do this random garbage with these stupid cactuses popping out of the ground that sucks. And then you go there, or you pop on your map, and it's like, do you want to go to the south dungeon or the north dungeon? And you're like, wait, what? Come again? Like, it's that moment, Jamie, that you alluded to, where you're like, you can buy your weapons to go to whatever location you want to go to first. But it happens even before the weapon purchase, where it's like it doesn't quite hit you yet until you have that moment where you go to a dungeon, you're doing your Zelda thing, and then all of a sudden it's like, no. This is literally spelled out as different. Like, it is, you can go to point one, or you can go to point two. Either one of them are equally valid. It doesn't matter which one you tackle.
And just going back to that first dungeon for a second, actually, just to touch on another really important moment in the game. I will just say that the central mechanic in the game, which is the painting mechanic, is mm-hmm. really, really cool. And even though the items kind of move to the background mm-hmm. because of the new design decisions where you get them all at once, they do have their chance to shine in each dungeon, but they're less important.
No.
The painting mechanic is relevant throughout the entire game, and it is explored completely to its fullest, and it is awesome. And it actually is one of those moments where the game subverts your expectations of what you're going to be getting with a sequel.
Right. So, Jeff, I think you said that like the painting mechanic is the items all in one power.
Yeah. It is the item in the game.
Yeah.
All the other items are like, you know, your sub weapons or whatever. You know, they're less important now.
They're tools.
Now it's just about the painting mechanic. And in fact, a lot of the items interact directly with the painting mechanic in interesting ways. But the cool moment in the first dungeon. So you go through the first dungeon. The layout's pretty similar. You go into the room. You fight the boss. You're like, okay, this is over.
Yep.
And then the boss turns you into a painting. And that's when you first are introduced to the painting mechanic. And you get the ability to move. And you move through a window. And suddenly you're outside the first dungeon.
Right.
Like in the sky outside of the first dungeon. On the wall of the dungeon outside, and you're like, holy shit. Like, this is not what I expected at all. Like, I'm seeing a part of this dungeon that I've never seen before. I'm interacting with the world in a way that I never did in the first game.
But it's all like, super familiar too. Like, you're like, oh, look, it's this part. Like, it's the tower part that I'm descending. Like, you exit it right at the entrance where you're like, oh, there's a little crack there. It's very much like has this little antechamber moment where you're like, whoa, this was here the entire time.
Yeah, it does a great job of getting you back from the end to the beginning of dungeons a lot. That's mm-hmm. definitely it. The dungeons are just so impeccably designed, but just that moment is like, it just like it really like opens up the world. It like explores this new corner of the existing world, and it's continually surprising and wonderful and impressive how much more they're able to get out of a world that you thought you'd already completely explored. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they definitely assuaged my fears there, because I was always really worried about that going in. Like, is this going to be new, or is it just going to feel samey the whole time?
Right.
And I can confidently say it is completely new.
Right. And so I thought that the painting mechanic would have, kind of the antechamber bit of like, oh, this just becomes about sequence breaking Zelda to speed run it, to see where you can crack the code and get the hook shot before the end of the game. But, you know, no, it wasn't the case at all. Like it's very, their design choices for where you can use that stuff are very deliberate. Like it is very much limited in so much as it is an item that you use in this dungeon. Like it's not this kind of like rule breaking ability that you have. Like I'm sure people will find ways to cheese it, but it, my initial fear was like, oh shit. Okay. If I pop up on this block, then I can press this other block with this bomb and then get through this weird way into the end of the dungeon. But no, everything there seems well designed enough that it's not only obvious, but it also makes sense to go. Well, I shouldn't say obvious, but it makes sense, and it's also not obvious to do anything but this.
Yeah. Well, it's rule breaking in a way that just subverts your expectations, but follows the expected design of the game. Go ahead, Jamie. Sorry.
I was just gonna say. So should I? I don't really want to go back and play the old one. Can I just play this game?
Yep.
Yeah, you don't need to play the old one at all.
And how much am I missing out?
Very little.
Okay. And okay. I was expecting you guys to say the opposite.
I think that it maybe might not be number two for you if you don't know about the older game. I think that a lot the experience is made more rich by having your expectations subverted, but it is still a fantastically designed game.
Right.
Superb dungeons.
Right. Jamie, I think the best thing you can do for yourself is to go back 15 years into the past and then play it as
just
a child and then retain those warm, delightful, nostalgic memories until you get to your current age, and then play A Link Between Worlds and like then you'll really understand it.
I think you should actually go back further and just kill Hitler.
Okay. Right. No, you should go back not quite that far, but also not quite as far as, or a little bit beyond A Link to the Past, and go back to Zelda, and then just hate The Adventure of Link, and then just hate this game. Be like, oh, this wasn't as good as the NES game.
It's a great game. It's very worth your time, James.
Totally. Yep. You don't need to have played Zelda A Link to the Past to really love this game, because it's like playing Ocarina of Time and then going and playing Majora's Mask and realizing that Majora's Mask is a better game.
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, it's one of those Nintendo sequels where they just sometimes somehow manage, even though it doesn't have the same new element. What's up?
Do you guys really think that was true, what I said?
I think
know
Majora's,
Jeff does.
I do, yeah.
Holy shit.
I Majora's Mask is one of my favorite games of all time.
Really? Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
A weird place to be in right now.
I haven't played Majora's Mask.
Play that game.
Did they release it on 3DS?
Not yet.
No, they probably will, though. They probably will, though.
Okay, see, that's what I'm waiting for.
Wait for that. Yeah, it's the Nintendo sequel that somehow has a lot of it reuses assets, but it is creative in kind of non expected ways, and it is better for it.
Right. It's the Mario Galaxy of Zelda games.
Gotcha.
Is that right, Jeff?
I don't know if I would say exactly that. It's a different analogy, but it is a superlative game. It's very worth your time.
All right. It's worth everybody's time.
Yeah.
But you know what isn't? A Gone Home. Oh, wait, I'm just kidding. It is.
Shut
it's
up.
It's one of
Shut
the top
up.
Five games of 2013.
Yes.
Even though I disagree with it.
Okay. You want to start the talk with this one, Jamie? Since
Sure. I'm kind of fading a little bit, but
okay, yeah, we gotta wind down soon.
We're at 2.5 hours here, so I think we should wrap this up.
Yeah.
Okay, let's maybe Gone Home and then finish up.
Yeah. Okay. Or Gone Home, you guys can hit Pokemon.
Or you know again. Which one's better, Gone Home or Pokemon? No, just kidding.
We're not doing that.
I think that Gone Home, like The Last of Us, could potentially drastically change the trajectory of games, especially the trajectory of what people are expecting from their little $10 or $20 indie game. And it's okay to have a $20 game that takes 3 hours to play and is set in a pretty ugly house. And I don't mean ugly as in like the house itself is ugly. I mean like the art assets in the game aren't so great, except for the found objects, which are pretty fabulous.
The rubber ducky is the greatest graphical accomplishment of all time.
But like little things about the house were so funny, like how like the mirrors just weren't mirrors and the doors swung both ways, and it was like it was such a janky weird game that somehow grabbed my attention in a way that only like a really great short story has to this point, but added to that short story something that only video games could, and kind of validates games as a medium that can kind of bring its own panache to like short storytelling and
it's one of those games like it didn't obviously it wasn't gamey in a traditional way, and that it didn't have like, you know, it wasn't like a traditional adventure game with inventory management, and it wasn't a fighting game, but it was interactive.
It certainly was not a fighting game.
It was interactive.
Although, wouldn't have that been good?
It would have been great.
Okay.
It was interactive, and it was better for being interactive, and that is probably the highest praise you can offer to it. I mean, there's so much more to say about it, and it's unfortunate that it's getting so late because
I think we did. I think we did this game justice in the best writing category, where we expounded how well Gone Home did in storytelling and how it was 100% storytelling married with gameplay, and how this sort of a thing isn't possible in other medias. It was, I think it is lightning in a bottle. I think it has done what it did do extremely well once. It's possible that something like this may be applied to future games. But I can't see it, and I think that Gone Home was a fantastic exercise in storytelling and gameplay design. That Soul Hook is seeing a story to its end, but I don't think it is a good game.
Well, I think it's a story first and kind of a game second, and not even like a game. I don't know what it is. I bought it on Steam, so I guess it's a game. But like,
yeah,
it does the same. When I play it, I feel the same as when I play a really good adventure game, and that's I'm just exploring, and it's like it was somehow relaxing and frightening and intriguing all at once.
Yeah,
and I think that I disagree, Griffin. I think it could happen again. I desperately want it to happen again, and I think that all it needs to happen again is a story that's as good and somehow as somehow meshes as well with the adventure game.
Yeah, I mean, obviously,
and trappings.
You're not going to be exploring an empty house, maybe again. Maybe that element of it is going to feel played out. But I do think it's a game. And I at no point did I think to myself like, wow, this is you know, I'm barely interacting with this world. I was just kind of along for the ride, and I guess I didn't really come into it like with any preconceptions about like what I thought like qualified as a game. I was just like, yeah, I'm playing a game. And the whole time I was like, yeah, I'm playing a game. I'm, you know, exploring the world, manipulating the environment. I'm finding shit that I wouldn't find unless I looked for it. That's pretty gamey to me. And, you know, at no point did I have like an internal conflict about it. I just experienced a really great story and had a lot of fun, you know, finding shit in the world and like just like the fun moments, like, you know, finding your dad's porn magazine and then later on finding your sister's porn magazine. It's just, I don't know. It's just,
and I said this before, but like, game. I said this in the writing thing, but it's just so goddamn ballsy. And I hope that stories like this keep coming out to put those 4chan bastards in their place. Because like, I'm sick of people writing games just because they think that they know the audience they're writing for. And I'm sick of people taking the community's input so seriously. Like, there's no reason to change the ending of Mass Effect 3. You wrote a game. It doesn't care who hates it. Mm-hmm. Just let it be. Right. I'm glad that they kind of came out and it's like, whatever. Yes, this story is like a magnet for trolls, and we don't care.
Honestly, I don't even think the ballsiest part was talking about lesbians. I think the ballsiest part was just not having any conflict.
Agreed. Yep. I think
Hanging your hat
on exploration alone, I think, was what Gone Home did well.
Yeah, well, even like in the narrative they delivered, it ended up being a relatively ordinary narrative, which I think is the hardest thing to do in telling a story. Like, I think that telling stories, I think that Dear Esther has attempted this before. I think that you know, having a game where all you do is get a story is something that has been done. I think that telling the story they told, which is kind of in many ways, like I said, a very ordinary story, is the ballsiest part, and that they pulled that off the way they did is incredible. I mean, obviously, you know, the obvious thing is like, you know, exploring lesbianism, that's going to upset a lot of people. To me, that was like something I'd kind of seen before, and like, maybe not in games, but I had seen it before, and that wasn't the thing that struck me the most. What struck me the most was how, you know, it just was a very ordinary story, but it was also very compelling. Mm-hmm. That's just how I feel about that.
Let's hit Pokemon so that Jamie can wake up really early and touch sick people.
Okay.
Can I just quickly two sentences about Gone Home?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Gone Home is a Blossom episode at its worst/best.
I won't disagree.
Gone Home is the complete opposite of one of my most favorite games of all time, Metal Gear Solid 4.
Hmm.
Gone Home is a hymen that has burst from the pressure of 1,000 Carl Rove's.
This is we're Tim Rogers-ing this game. This is a Tim Rogers style review.
I feel it is, but I feel like it works with Gone Home.
Yeah.
Gone Home in and of itself is a haiku, therefore a haiku summary should be stated about it.
I don't know, for me it just, we should finish up, but it at no point was I like, wow, like I've never seen anything like this before. In some ways I was, but it doesn't feel like some weird like hipster thing. It just felt like a game to me. I was always like, this is a game, just like any other game, but it's a really good one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it wasn't forced. Like Dear Esther was, yeah, as to borrow a term from Griffin earlier, masturbatory to me.
Oh yeah.
And but this didn't seem that way at all. It didn't seem self-indulgent. No. It was very straightforward and very honest and very natural.
Yes.
Well, Speaking of unnatural, let's talk about Pokemon XY for the next two minutes.
Okay. Griffin, you want to talk about it? I'm feeling pretty drained, and then I'll join in.
Pokemon X and Y, the only reason why this game is on the list is because it introduced an online component to the Pokemon franchise, the tried and true trusted Pokemon that you've always loved since your childhood, which has been forever, let me remind you. Jamie, the reason why you did not like Pokemon X and Y is because you were not playing. You didn't play it right. the best thing about Pokemon X and Y was playing that game with friends while they were playing it and having that Gary Oak competitive moment when you're going through dungeon to dungeon and then all of a sudden it's like, hey buddy, where are you right now? Let's battle. Oh my gosh, you have Pokemon that are slightly better than mine. What dungeon are you at? One above me? Okay, cool. Wow, I have so much to look forward to. Like, it is that Pokemon, it is essentially like they did one thing well. They introduced an online component that was persistent, brilliant, and made sense in the Pokemon universe as it being like this always online Pokemon connection to my friends. If that wasn't there, this would be another Diamond Pearl situation of just like, ho-hum, it's another Pokemon game with mild improvements to backpack organization, new Pokemons, some interesting new mechanics that are kind of cool, kind of not cool. Like, I like Disney digging out fossils, but I also don't really give a fuck. But it is that online mechanic which elevated Pokemon into this new realm that Nintendo so irregularly treads that I loved and that hooked me.
Yeah, and for the longtime fans, I will say there are kind of two types of Pokemon games. There are the ones that add a lot of Pokemon, and then there are the ones that kind of take a look back at what has been done so far and kind of tidy everything up. They try to make like Pokemon that had kind of fallen out of the spotlight relevant again. They really focus on balancing the game. They reintroduce old favorites. This is very much that game. And it also has some really just cool elements. Like Mega Evolution is surprisingly cool. I was very skeptical of it, but it's a super cool idea. And just like, it's a really good way. Like, the last game was all new Pokemon. This game had a lot of old Pokemon. And for that reason, I was like, I don't know.
It's coming but home again.
It reintroduces them so well. And each one has like a new wrinkle. Like the fairy type touches every Pokemon in the game in a unique way. Even though it only gets applied to a few. And this is all very mechanical stuff, so maybe it's not really relevant to you guys. But the fairy type changes things. You know, Mega Evolution changes things to some extent. It is very much a balance, a tweak, combined with this world that's just really fun to traverse. And all your old guys are there, and some new guys are there. And the new guys are really interesting, even though there aren't a lot of them. There's a lot of really interesting like approaches to Pokemon in this new one, like the Firebird that gets priority on its attacks. I won't spend too long on the mechanics, but there's the Firebird. He has some really cool stuff. There's the Ghost with the Sword and Shield. He has some awesome stuff going on. There clearly was so much care put into this game, and it just shines through in every moment of the game. And I agree that the gym formula is getting a little long in the tooth. I found this game especially easy, which kind of sucks. I really hope that one day they abandon that formula because that needs to go.
The story is ultra bullshit. Like, it has discovered new levels of bullshit.
Yep, it's the worst story.
Redefining anime bullshit.
Yep.
It is out get backer is get backered. It's out get backered.
It's incoherent. It's a terrible story.
100%.
And I would be overjoyed if they completely got rid of all of the grind. That'd be great. They are at least making it a little easier. I feel like I could do it if I wanted to, which is nice. But yeah, they need to get rid of that. But it is still a really incredible accomplishment, and it's just a game that has a level of polish that is really just incredibly impressive, and it's going to have legs. I mean, it is competitively very interesting, and I know you feel like it's like StarCraft, and at the highest level it might be, but there's just so many of these guys, and they have so many different strategies that you can have a great time with any six dudes, and you are spoiled for choice.
It is the best time to come back to Pokemon, and it is the best time to be a part of Pokemon.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Great.
And that's Pokemon.
2013, motherfuckers.
We killed it.
Best game of the year, The Last of Us. Second best game of the year, BioShock Infinite. Second best game of the year, Pokemon X, Pokemon Y. Second best game of the year, Zelda, A Link Between Worlds. Second best game of the year, but not. Gone home.
Gone home.
Gudra.
So thank you, Jamie and Jeff. This has been nearly 3 hours of discussion narrowing down a surprising amount of video games that were amazing in 2013. If you have not played any of these things that we've talked about on the list, I highly suggest that you go and find them through Steam, through your used game store, or just buying them new. Like, they're all worth it. It is all some of the best games that you can play, not only of 2013, but of all times. Like, they are ranking up there for all of us. We all love them. We will fight to the death for them. And just because we cut them off this list doesn't mean that we, you know, dislike them by any means. They're here for a reason. 2013 was a great year, and we cannot say more than ever that these are the best games of 2013.
Let's go to bed. We did it.
All right.
Sweet dreams.
Congratulations, everyone.
All right.
We'll see you in 2014.
Good night, sweet prince.